night of our annual town meetings. Coffee and snacks are being provided this evening out back by the Student Exchange of LS. A few reminders, probably you've all heard it before, but we might as well remind ourselves again, no smoking. Please give your name and address each time you speak. And this is in order that we have a clear record of the meeting. If you desire to be recognized, the easiest way is to assure this is to approach one of the microphones so I'll be able to see you. All motions of substance, and that includes main motions and motions to amend a main motion, should be delivered to the clerk in writing either before they're made or directly thereafter. I remind you that only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees may speak without leave of the hall. And finally, I caution everybody here who's here because of a matter that's of particular interest to them. Please don't bolt the hall as soon as we vote on the matter because someone may seek a counted vote or reconsideration. So, and if you've left, you will not be able to participate in that. The first order of business is to announce that a proper motion to reconsider has been filed with respect to the defeat of the motion under Article 49 last night, and in conformity with the rules on which we operate, this will be the first order of business in the session we're going to have on May 21st. It will not be taken up tonight. It will be taken up as the first order of business on May 21st. Please come to order. Let's calm it down here a little bit. First order of business in the warrant tonight is Article 50, a zoning article, to amend zoning bylaw Article 9, 4243K, water resource protection overlay districts, impervious surface limitation. Submitted by the planning board, the vote required in a main motion under this article would be a two-thirds vote. Recognize the planning board.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Bill Keller, 31 Churchill Street, Chairman of the Planning Board, speaking on behalf of the Planning Board tonight. The article which I move to indefinitely postpone.
And the motion is to indefinitely postpone. Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Keller, you're recognized in support of your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The article is a proposal by the Planning Board to improve stormwater management, which we believe would help protect the quality and quantity of our drinking water. The intent is to provide an incentive for the redevelopment and or upgrading of commercial properties that lie within Zone 2 aquifer recharge area, which is primarily along Route 20. Most of the properties in this area predate present zoning and do not comply with the current provisions of the Water Resources Protection District bylaw. They can continue operating as is. There presently is no incentive for those property owners to improve their properties. The vast majority of these properties have no stormwater controls. It is our belief that by providing more flexibility in the bylaw, we can allow business owners to upgrade their properties, increase their economic potential, hopefully increase the tax base, and at the same time achieve better protection of groundwater resources in the area. To accomplish this, we drafted the present article. We circulated copies throughout January. We held a public hearing to invite citizen input and presented this proposal to a meeting of the Conservation Commission on February 10th. Unfortunately, with the busyness of everyone's schedules, the Conservation Commission was not able to provide us with any formalized feedback until just about a week ago. And the Commission has communicated their regret over not responding to our presentation in a more timely manner and expressed to us their desire to work with the Planning Board on broader and more creative solutions to the stormwater management problems along Route 20. They have requested that we indefinitely postpone the present article. The Planning Board would very much like to honor their request, and we look forward to bringing a jointly sponsored proposal for the next town meeting to address this stormwater management problem along Route 20. Thank you.
My understanding is the Finance Committee takes no position on this article in any event.
That's correct, Mr. Moderator.
Selectman on the motion to indefinitely postpone.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen urges support of the indefinite postponement.
All right. Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Mark Ensign. I reside at 44 Bent Road. I'm a Conservation Commissioner, and I'm here tonight on behalf of the Conservation Commission. The Conservation Commission applauds the Planning Board's efforts to enhance the prosperity of Sudbury through the encouragement of economic development of underutilized properties. We also commend their intent to preserve and protect Sudbury's valuable water resources. The Conservation Commission concurs with the Planning Board's decision to postpone Article 50, and we look forward to working with the Planning Board on the further evaluation of this bylaw amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard of them? Mr. Meixel?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'm Mike Meixel from 34 Barden Drive. Excuse me. I would like to indicate I'm in favor of an indefinite postponement. I support it. I would like to indicate five items, however, that hopefully would be addressed in the article when it's brought before us again. First, the article, the warrant, or the report in the warrant, should explain why the upper limit of 25% was placed on the impervious surface in the first place, and should explain how that limit was chosen. Second, the Planning Board, depending on when they bring the article back before the town meeting, should take into account the implications of the forthcoming federal and state stormwater regulations. And third, we should have information on how many sites could potentially be affected by reducing or not reducing, but by eliminating the upper limit on the 25% impervious surface. Also, we would like to know what the problems are and how serious each of the problems is. And finally, Article 50, at least in its present form, would require the construction of additional stormwater devices and basins. It would be desirable to know what additional budget and staffing would be required for effective monitoring and enforcement. And then that's not a minor issue. I'd like to say that, of course, it would be impractical for the warrant to contain all of the details. However, at a minimum, it should contain a map of the affected area and should identify all of the sites which are problem sites, as well as all other sites which could increase their impervious surface if Article 50 were to pass. In addition, we should know how many total acres of impervious surface would be allowed to be added to the current number of acres. And the warrant should at least summarize the five items which I mentioned previously. The data, information, and studies also should be distributed sufficiently far in advance of town meeting so that the interested parties have time to check the data and to evaluate the conclusions. I support the indefinite postponement of Article 50.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 50? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion to indefinitely postpone, please indicate by raising your cards. Any opposed? The motion carries. Article 51, the zoning article, amend zoning bylaw, Article 9, 2230, table of principal use regulations, Appendix A, submitted by the planning board. The vote required on a main motion under this article would be a two-thirds vote. Ms. Cadillac for a motion.
Move in the words of the article.
The motion is in the words of, excuse me, is in the words of the article. Does that receive a second? It does. Ms. Cadillac, you recognize support of your motion.
Good evening. Jody Cadillac, town planner. As mentioned at both the 2001 and 2002 annual town meeting, the zoning bylaw is a dynamic document that we anticipate bringing back to town meeting for revision as the need arises. We've done this last year with several minor revisions. The planning board has been working on more major revisions, and we had three articles proposed this year for town meeting. One issue that was identified by the planning board during the 2001 comprehensive revision to the bylaw, which has yet to be completed, was an in-depth look at the use table, the zoning bylaw use table, to ensure that the uses that are allowed under the use table are compatible with the town's goals. This was a large project that the comprehensive revision did not undertake. It was one of the points that was picked out for further study. Some changes to the use table were made in the 2001 comprehensive revision. This article tonight contemplates one additional change. And while the planning board has not completed the in-depth study of the use table that they do want to take, this one area we thought warrants consideration tonight. Okay, thank you. The industrial use category of the bylaw is limited in Sudbury, allowing only five types of industrial uses in Sudbury, as the slide shows. However, in two of those districts, the limited industrial district and the industrial park district, only three of the five uses are permitted by right. Those by right uses, as you can see on the chart, are light manufacturing, research and development laboratory, and manufacturing. What we're asking for tonight is for the use, which includes wholesale, warehouse, self-storage, mini warehouse, and distribution facilities to be allowed in these districts. Currently, they are prohibited. And the purpose of this article is to allow those uses in all three of the industrial districts. The only parcels that are contained in these two districts, there are five parcels: Chiswick Park, Saxonville Lumber, the former New England Door parcel, Raytheon, the town landfill, and Methods Machines. Given that these parcels contain some of the largest commercial buildings in Sudbury and land suitable for large buildings, they are appropriate for the wholesale and the warehouse use. The current zoning allows few options for these parcels: business or professional use offices, banks, commercial recreation facilities are the only by right uses in these districts. Several uses are also allowed by special permit, including kennels, funeral homes, adult daycare centers, and bed and breakfast establishments, and indoor commercial recreation. The inability to utilize these large buildings for the types of uses creates an obstacle to the resale of the properties. While redevelopment of these sites into higher assessed business uses, such as office, may happen in the future, at the present time, their marketability is decreased due to the size of the building on them. This article seeks to further implement the economic development goals of the 2001 Sudbury Master Plan of promoting economic growth in existing developed areas, seeking to retain businesses in Sudbury by recognizing their needs, and working together in partnership. The Planning Board urges your support.
My understanding is the Finance Committee does not take a position in this article. The Selectman, Mr. Finney.
Selectman support, thank you.
Selectman support. Does anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 51? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 51, please indicate by raising your cards. Any opposed? It passes by a clear two-thirds. Article Article 52, a zoning article. Amend the zoning bylaw, Article 9, 2600, Appendix B, and Section 2641, front yard setback in residential districts. This was submitted by petition on behalf of the building inspector. The vote required on a main motion under this article will be a two-thirds vote. I can ask you
to move in the words of the article.
Motion is in the words of the article. Does that receive a second? It does.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Jim Kelly. I'm the building inspector for the town of Sudbury. As stated in the warrant, this article is to simplify the bylaw. We currently have two different numbers in the bylaw for essentially the same thing, that being a minimum front yard requirement. This bylaw change will eliminate one of those numbers and make the bylaw more consistent and easier to read. Thank you.
I understand the Finance Committee has no position on this matter. The Selectman, Mr. Dubinsky.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen support this article.
All right. Planning Board, have a report.
Forgot I was supposed to speak on this. Yes, the Planning Board obviously recommends approval of this. As Mr. Kelly has said, this will make it a lot easier for him to do his job, and we should have just one front yard setback.
Does anyone else wish to be heard in the motion under Article 52? I see no one. Mr. Coe.
Moderator.
You know, Mr. Coe, you're slipping. You're usually up quicker.
A little sluggish tonight.
We're all getting older, huh, Bob?
Yeah, not getting any younger. Can we have a little bit more of an explanation of what's going on here? According to the warrant, the setback used to be from the center line of the road, and now it's from, I guess, the edge of the street. And so, what used to be 65 feet is now 40 feet. Is that the fair statement?
What's proposed?
Yeah. Well, that seems to be what they're saying is the case. Now, are there still lots that do extend to the center line of the road, and is this change going to change how far back from the edge of the road the building can be done? In other words, is this just to clean up something that, for historical reasons, has two different numbers, or does it actually affect some parcels and change what the setback requirement is relative to today's standards?
Well, basically, it's just to clean up the bylaw. Right now, what the bylaw is today is the minimum street centerline setback is 65 feet. Or 35 feet, whichever is greater. Streets today are built 50 feet wide. So if you go from the center of a 50-foot right-of-way, you'd add 25 feet for that half of the right-of-way, and 40 more feet from that point, which would be the lot line, would equal 65 feet. Essentially, this is a very complicated bylaw, that's why I'm here tonight. Essentially, there will be no change from current zoning. The 40 feet will just clean up. 35 feet only comes into play on a cul-de-sac parcel. That cul-de-sac parcel in the future will just have to be 40 feet. It'll just make the bylaw a lot cleaner, a lot easier to read. If anybody's ever called the building department and asked for the setback dimension for the front yard setback, I think you'd understand. I hope that's clear. It's complicated, but this whole process really will have no change, essentially no change whatsoever to the current front yard setback.
Mrs. Coe, yeah. You have a dissenting position in the Coe family?
No. that happens. Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I'm a former highway commissioner, okay, many years ago. There are these streets like the ones we saw with the scenic roads last night, these dedicated ways from 1841 and so forth. Whenever we came in with walkways, we would run into problems of we don't know where the edge of the street is. And that's because when these streets were, ruts in the road, they didn't really know where the center of the street was, where the edge of the person's property was, and that sort of thing. Have these scenic roads been considered when you wrote this?
Not really. I think what you're saying is you didn't know where the center of the pavement was on those scenic roads. We can determine the lot lines on either side of the road, but we can't determine the minimum of the center of the right-of-way of those roads. Your right-of-way may be 30 feet. The pavement may only be 20 feet.
Yep.
That pavement could be way over to the left side of that right-of-way.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Is that what you're trying to clear up with this?
That's what I'm trying to clear up.
Yeah, and you could define this in a way that would be equitable to the people on both sides of the street?
40 feet from the lot line would be the same for both sides of the street.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 52? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion on Article 52, please raise your hands. Anybody raise your cards? And any opposed? I see some, so I'll just call it. It's a clear two-thirds vote in favor. Declare the motion passed. Now, for those of you who are standing, there are a number of seats down front on both sides still vacant, and in the middle, if you'd like a seat. Where is she?
What? Did she go out?
Jan. Article 53, amend the bylaws, Article 529, door-to-door solicitation, submitted by the police chief. The vote required on a main motion under this article would be a majority vote. Recognize Chief Lembo.
My name is Peter Lembo. I'm the police chief in Sudbury. I'd like to move in the words of the article, except that the words charged with shall be changed to convicted of in paragraph D1I.
The motion is in the words of the article with that one exception. Does it receive a second? Does? Chief, do you want to speak to the motion?
Yeah. The purpose of this new bylaw is the bylaw that we presently operate is unconstitutional. As a result of many court cases that have come down over the last few years, we've had a lot of complaints the last two or three years on door-to-door salesmen. What we're attempting to do with this bylaw is to regulate the movement of these people when they come into the town. We want to register them, check them out, see that they're not convicted felons or they have any serious misdemeanors. In the past, we've had problems with the salesmen that have come in from out of state. We had a rape case of an elderly woman off of Peacock Road years ago. We've had kidnappings of girls in town from these door-to-door salesmen. We've had elderly that have been scammed. We've had various types of assault and batteries and different types of crimes. I urge you to support this article, to give us some tools to deal with these people that come into town. Thank you.
I understand the Finance Committee has no position on this. Selectman, Mr. Dubinsky.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen look at this as a public safety issue, and we think it's really something we need in town to give the chief the power to protect the public. So the board urges you to support this article.
Right. Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion on Article 53? Yes, ma'am.
Judy Deutsch, 41 Concord Road. I would like to know, sir, what is the unconstitutional part of the present bylaw under which we're operating, and how would that be corrected by the one you submitted?
Well, I believe that's addressed and just in the last part, recent court decisions have rendered the town's court's bylaw prohibiting commercial door-to-door solicitation unenforceable.
Okay.
I can't quote you what the Supreme Court cases are on this. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
I just know what we did when we did this bylaw is we went to five or six surrounding towns like Wellesley, Wayland, Weston, Hudson, and some of the other towns, and we looked at what they had for bylaws, and we tried to put it together so we could have something in here that would be really beneficial to the citizens in town.
That wouldn't prohibit door-to-door
solicitation. It doesn't prohibit. Okay. This doesn't prohibit Girl Scouts going around selling cookies,
mm-hmm.
or non-profit organizations from going around, churches or anything like that. This prohibits certain people, like door-to-door salesmen, that come to your house at 9 o'clock at night and ring your doorbell and want to sell you magazines or pots and pans or cleaners or whatever it is. We'd like to know who these people are when they come into town. We'd like them to register with us. We'd like to take their pictures. We'd like to fingerprint them so we can check their records. We can check fingerprints. Now with the new Sherlock system, we can check it and see if a person is wanted in another state or some other surrounding towns. It gives us it's a good tool for us to know who exactly is walking around the neighborhoods in the town.
And would they have to register each time they come back?
Yes, I believe that's addressed in the bylaw, yes.
Anyone else wish to? Yes, sir.
Thomas Holliker, 623 Concord Road. Did you recognize me or him?
Yeah, I recognize you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Tom Holliker, 623 Concord Road. I'd like to move for indefinite postponement.
Of this article?
Of this article.
All right. A motion has been made to indefinitely postpone this article. Does that receive a second? It does receive a second. All right, why would you like to have it indefinitely postponed, sir?
Well, I'd like to make a presentation.
Fine.
Can I use this? Not a transparency.
No, it won't work. That's right.
Okay. I thought that there was a machine up here that would project what's on the paper, so I'll need to read it to you. Selling things door-to-door is a time-honored feature of free enterprise capitalism. Indeed, many of us made money during high school and college peddling magazines or newspaper subscriptions, cosmetics, books, etc. I know I did. I submit that Article 53 is written in such a way as to discourage door-to-door marketing in its effort to regulate the practice and is ambiguous or incomplete on important points. And I have a list of 8 points that I'm going to try to cover very quickly. In Section D1, Roman 1, the wording allows the police to collect information that they do not need and should not have, in my opinion. The applicant is supposed to divulge whether he has ever been charged Well, now it's convicted. That's been changed. Okay, convicted of a felony. But let's take the word ever. In my case, that could be 57 years ago, easily, 58 years ago. And it seems to me that ancient history is really not relevant in this matter. There should be a definite period of relevance, let's say perhaps 5 years or something of that sort, with regard to convictions. And then the candidate or the applicant shall be photographed and have his fingerprints taken. But I'll tell you, I would be loath to give my fingerprints in order to get a permit for anything to the police of Sudbury. I just don't think I would want to do that. And I suspect that many of you would be reluctant to give your fingerprints. The second point concerns section D1 Roman 1. And it allows the police chief, who would issue permits, little or no discretion in making decisions on permits. The wording says the chief shall approve the application within 5 days unless he determines the applicant is a convicted felon, convicted of any of the above list of misdemeanors, or is a fugitive from justice. Now, what does this mean? Does it mean that approval will be made in something greater than 5 days, or does it mean not at all? Point three. The wording stipulates a time period to obtain a permit that, in my view, is unreasonably long and might discourage applicants. It could take up to 5 days for a decision, 3 days to make up the card, an unknown number of days to notify the applicant, 2 days for one weekend, and we're talking about possibly more than 10 days, I mean 10 days or possibly more than 10 days. And I think that's an unreasonably long period of time and an inconvenience, particularly for young people who may be selling books or magazines and who may be housed in local motels. Now, point four, section D1I, allows the permit to be valid for an inflexible period, 30 days, rather than for a greater or lesser time to meet the needs of the applicant. The fifth point is that section D1 Roman 1 fails to set forth a procedure or fee for reapplication or renewal of the existing permit. Six, the same, actually a different section, section D1, Roman numeral 3, stipulates a fee of $25 that in and of itself is really not too outrageous, but could be considered excessive for some vendors, and it's something on which I would hope the police chief would have discretion to waive if, in his wisdom, good judgment, it should be waived. Point seven is that section F proposes a prolonged and perhaps meaningless appeals process that could take up to 40 days to complete and would expect the selectmen to second guess the chief of police on matters of public safety and trust. I'm not sure I can propose at this time what would constitute a reasonable appeals process.
Sir, you're well beyond the 5 minutes okay. You're allowed. All right. How much more time do you need?
Well, I just, there's one more point and that's it.
All right.
Okay. All right, point eight. The article seems to have no explicit provision for a collective company permit under which the company would be responsible for its employees through a bond insurance or related device. Suppose a company employed 30 persons to be vendors in Sudbury. This would presumably cost them $750 if each person needed to be charged as $25, as opposed to $25 for the company. This is, I think, one of the problems of having a photo ID card. Okay, I just want to say in conclusion that I am sympathetic with the possible need for some regulation of house-to-house marketing and solicitation. The process leading to permits ought to be expedient, simple, and intrude as little as possible into an applicant's privacy, rather than drawn out, draconian, and confused. I urge you, therefore, to support indefinite postponement until this article can be carefully reconsidered and rewritten.
Mr. Coe, this is on. We're on indefinite postponement now at this point.
Yes, Mr. Moderator, I am not sure about Mr. Hollicker's motion and why he wants to replace a motion that would only require 34% to defeat for one that would take 50% to get his way. But all that aside, I think I see his point. Let me put it this way. If this article had been proposed by John Ashcroft, it would not get 50 votes in this hall.
Mr. Coe, I'm intrigued by one comment you made about it only taking 34% to defeat. Are you under the misapprehension that this requires a two-thirds vote?
Yes, I'm under that misapprehension.
Well, that is a misapprehension. The indefinite, just so the call is clear, the indefinite postponement motion only requires a majority vote. It does not require a two-thirds vote. Yes, sir.
I'm Harold Homefield of 16 Curtis Circle. I don't know about the rest of us, but as for me, I think the police chief's concept is a very good one. I personally would resent anybody coming to my door and bothering me. If I need to purchase anything, I know where to go in town. Thank you.
Anyone else want to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? Oh, yes. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. My name's Betty Farmer, and I live at 46 Green Hill Road. When I came into the hall, I heard somebody using rather strong language about people who call door-to-door selling something. Now, back in the 70s and 80s, I called on many people as I was regional manager of World Book Encyclopedia, and I trained people for door-to-door sales. And at the time, Whalen had a very good rule. You did have to go to the police department and you did register, but you didn't have to be fingerprinted like a criminal, and you didn't have to have your picture taken, and you were treated like a human being. Now, I think Sudbury should do the same. Now, unless they come up with a ruling that is reasonable, then maybe we ought to vote for postponement.
Right, we're all there. Yeah, I think it's good. All right, we're on the motion to indefinitely postpone at this point. There's been a call for the question. I don't see anyone else who wants to speak on that motion anyway. So, all those in favor of indefinitely postponing Article 53, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed. All right, that motion's defeated, and we're back to the main motion. Yes, sir.
Mr. Moderator, Steve Wishner, Fox Run. I would like to propose an amendment to this article. I think one of the points made by the last speaker was a rather good one, and I would like to correct something in the article that I think may have been incompletely drafted. In the article, in the sentence that says, the chief of police shall, this is on page 38 in the warrant, the chief of police shall approve the application within 5 days of its filing, unless he determines either that the, I'm sorry, take out the word either, unless he determines that the application is incomplete. I would like to then put a period there and start a new sentence with the word if. If the applicant is a convicted felon, has been convicted of any of the above listed misdemeanors, or is a fugitive from justice, I would then like to add the words, the application shall not be approved.
All right, I take it then that amendment basically makes explicit what is perhaps implicit in the current language.
Yes, Mr. Moderator. I think it's intended in the language that if the individual is a convicted felon, a fugitive, or convicted of the misdemeanors listed therein, I think the intention of the article would be for that person not to be able to roam around town.
Does the motion to amend receive a second?
It does.
Anyone want to be heard on the motion to amend? Chief?
When we put some of these misdemeanors down there in this article, there's only 1, 2, 6, or 7 of them. And the general laws is about 1,000 different types of misdemeanors. It would be impossible to put all those misdemeanors into this article. We'd like to look at each individual application to make a determination whether we feel as though that person is fit to be selling door-to-door in the town of Sudbury. This is what we do. We deal with these people day in and day out. This article is for the townspeople. This is what they requested from us. We have hundreds of calls down there every year asking us, what are we doing about these people? We don't want them in our yard. They're rude to our wives. They refuse to leave the property. We need some tools to regulate this problem that we're having. We don't have too many problems in Sudbury, but we do with door-to-door salesmen. It's a problem for us.
Chief, your concern with the amendment is it forces you down to a very narrow scope of where you can refuse the permit.
Yes.
I get your point. Does the moving party understand that the problem with the language the chief is seeing in it is that by making that change, you reduce the basis on which he can refuse an amendment to very explicit things, as opposed to his also having the right to refuse the application if just in the general judgment of the police department, this is not an individual we want around town. I understand that's what the chief's point is here, and I wonder if that affects you, whether you want to continue with the amendment or not.
Frankly, I think the chief and I are in violent agreement on the issue, but I think that the article, the way it's drafted, is quite unclear as to what action would or even should be taken. I'm not even clear why we would list these misdemeanors if these are not the ones that we're concerned about.
I think the chief's point is that he can't list them all, and there may be a guilty on a misdemeanor that comes up that is not on this list. Am I right, Chief, that would convince you that this is somebody we should not have in town?
Yes.
Simply because, as the Chief correctly points out, the list of misdemeanors in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is very long. You know, it started back in the days of the colonial times when if you wore your bonnet wrong, it was a misdemeanor. And it would be impossible to list them all, is his point. The moderator's staying out of this. I just want to know, do you wish to press the amendment in light of the Chief's comment?
I think I'd be happy to withdraw the amendment if it's the chief's sense that this undermines what he's trying to achieve.
Good. All right. Now we're back to the main motion before that amendment was proposed. Yes, sir.
I think that woman was ahead of me.
I know, but I run the meeting. It's tough that way.
I just wanted to be a gentleman. Tom Hollicker, 623 Concord Road. I have a question for counsel.
Yes, go ahead.
Does the town of Sudbury have the right or prerogative to deny a person convicted of a
felony or a misdemeanor from receiving a permit on those grounds alone. I mean, can Massachusetts deny a driver's permit to a convicted felon, for example?
Well, which question do you want answered? You want the first one or the second one?
All right.
The second one is just free legal advice, and we don't give that here.
Okay.
The first one, town council will address.
Right. Well, at least
can Sudbury pass this bylaw? Which is
I would like to leave it up to him to handle it any way he wants.
The bylaw, if passed in this form, is legal, and the town can, in fact, enforce it.
Okay. Well, sir, I would, Mr. Moderator, I would like to urge the amendment that was discarded a moment ago to be considered, because it is quite unclear in the present wording what the police chief is doing or can do after 5 days.
Well, all right. Do you wish to make a motion to amend? If so, could you please put it in writing and give it to the town clerk while I ask this lady to speak?
It's exactly the wording of the previous speaker.
So you wish to resurrect the amendment that was withdrawn?
Yes.
All right. Does that receive a second? Yes, I see a second. All right. Does anybody else want to be heard on the motion to amend? I see nobody. All those who are in... do you want to be heard on the motion to amend, ma'am, or the main motion?
Well, it's not dependent on whether it's amended or not. May I?
Well, I want you to address them. You will get a chance to speak on the main motion if that's all you want to speak on. If you want to speak to the amendment, then you may do so.
I'd like to request some clarity.
On the amendment?
All right, let's say on the amended language.
On the amended language, what would you like clarified?
Well, at your discretion, either before or after deciding on the amendment, I'd be thankful if someone would clarify for me how the wording that is proposed tonight differs from the Section 29 that's currently on the books. I'm not familiar with the bylaw as it reads, as the existing bylaw reads.
All right. That's not on the amendment, but let's get it out of the way. Go ahead, Mr. Kenny.
That would be present bylaw prohibits door-to-door solicitation.
Flatly prohibits it. Is that what your point is? Yeah, okay. All right, now we have this amendment on the floor. Anyone else want to be heard on the amendment? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion to amend, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed? That's defeated. We're now back to Chief Lembo's original motion again. Does anyone wish to be heard on that? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 53? Point of order. What's the point of order? Oh, you want to be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't see you. I apologize.
You got to move fast here. Town Council just said that the existing bylaw flat out prohibits solicitation door-to-door, and yet we have lots of door-to-door solicitors. So the law hasn't eliminated the irritation or risks associated with door-to-door solicitation. I don't see how this is going to change that one iota. And if somebody has ill intent, I don't think they're going to go to the police station to get a permit so that they can execute their ill intent. It doesn't make any sense to me, and I don't think we're any better off with this bylaw than we are with the current one.
Does anyone? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Kaser, 34 Blacksmith Drive. This is my first time at a mic, so I simply wanted to say I'm not a pro on writing articles, but I just wanted to say that as a parent who lives in Sudbury and as a volunteer of the school system, I've recently had to fill out a handout that basically says you are allowed to get a criminal record on anyone who volunteers for the school. And I'm a resident. So I don't have any problem with the town getting a criminal record on someone who wants to knock at my door. Now, I don't know if you want to simplify this. I guess I don't know. We seem to be arguing on language. I don't know if it would help any to say, if you're allowed to get a criminal record on your resident, let's just go and get a criminal records on people who want to go door knocking and leave it at that. Does that simplify anything?
Gentleman here wishes to be heard.
My name is Phil Migdahl. I live at 787 Concord Road. My question is to the town council. There was a question earlier to the police chief as to what was unconstitutional about the prior law. Is the unconstitutionality the fact that we did not wish to have door-to-door salesmen in this town at all? Is that unconstitutional?
That's correct, sir. But the bylaw presented today seeks to change that because we have been unable to enforce the bylaw because the United States Supreme Court decision saying it was a similar bylaw was unconstitutional. This bylaw seeks only to regulate door-to-door salesmen, not to prohibit them.
Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 53? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 53, please indicate by raising your cards. Any opposed? The motion carries. Article 54. Senior citizen real estate tax exemption submitted by petition. The vote required on a main motion under this article would be a majority vote. I recognize Mr. Ralph Tyler for a motion.
Do you have one of the one that's slide that's the motion slide? I move in the words of Article 54, except for the following changes. Replace the first sentence in Section 2, Paragraph 2, with the following. No property shall be granted a senior citizen real estate tax exemption that does not meet the qualifications as of July 1st, the first day of the fiscal year. The senior citizen exemption shall be prorated during the fiscal year when a property ceases to be qualified, such as when the property is sold to a buyer who does not qualify for the senior citizen real estate tax exemption. The second correction or clarification, at the end of Section 3, add a new sentence as follows. The senior citizen real estate tax exemption shall be implemented by the Sudbury assessors as an exemption for each qualifying property, not as a tax abatement, so that the senior citizen real estate tax exemption program does not result in a charge to the town's operating budget. And then third, in Section 4, insert the words, or maximum amount. By the way, these are all in yellow up there on the screen. Expand. Or maximum amount before the word shall not, and I'll explain these when we get to the article, and add a Section 5 as follows. Section 5, severability. If any provision of this special act is ruled to be unconstitutional, the remaining portion shall remain in full force and effect.
Thank you. Does that receive a second?
All right,
it does. Mr. Todd, just before you begin, I'll recognize you in a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, a lot of you are standing. I'm informed we have fitted out the lecture hall. You'll be able to hear and see everything from there. You will not be able to speak from there. So if you want to speak, you'll have to come back to the hall to speak. But if those of you who aren't seated would like to go to the lecture hall and have a seat, you'll be able to observe everything. If you stay there for the vote, we'll count the vote out there and everything. If you want to speak, you will have to come back here. But the lecture hall is available with seats for those of you who are standing, if you'd like. Right. Go ahead, Mr. Tyler. You're recognized. Oh, wait a minute. You did receive a second. You're recognized in support of your motion.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to request an extended time, and I'd like to see if the hall would grant me about 30 minutes. I hope it's going to take far less.
Hold it. Look, now wait a minute. As I said the other night, applause, laughter is good. Booing, hissing, and that kind of comments are out. Now, the second thing is we will see what the hall wants to do with a simple show of hands. Mr. Tyler has requested 30 minutes. It's an important article. A lot of people are here to see it tonight. It does not seem unreasonable to the chair, this request, but it's up to the hall. Now, how many are willing to grant Mr. Tyler 30 minutes? How many are opposed to that? I am going to rule that a majority went for giving him 30 minutes.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Talley, you're recognized for 30 minutes.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Okay. Why don't you put that other file on the board for the changes? What I've asked him to do is to put, which will be in larger type, the motion that I just read to you, which are the changes. Maybe that'll clarify it for you. No, not the PowerPoint, just that other. There we go. I'm sorry. I wanted to show it in the context of the article, and I didn't realize the size. So this is what I read, and let me just try and explain the purpose of these minor changes. As I've learned about the process of tax assessing, and one of the things that I understood that I didn't understand when this article was written is that it's important that you sort of establish a fixed date for qualification. So this change in the first sentence there merely makes a property that does not qualify on July 1st, if somebody buys it who would qualify for a senior citizen tax exemption, they would have to wait till the following year in order to take advantage of that program. Otherwise, you have problems about how do you set the tax rate if you kind of have a floating pool of homes that are either qualified or not qualified. That's the rationale. The second change there is in response to a number of concerns that were raised. I think Chuck Schwager brought it to my attention first, that some people were interpreting this as being around a $4 million or more charge against the operating budgets, thinking that what we were trying to do was to decimate the current operating budget of the town. That was not our purpose. It's not necessary to implement this for this to be a charge against the budget. And this merely clarifies that so that as we work through this, if this passes tonight, that we can show them how to do it. And then if you could move it up a little bit. This, in terms of this word, the maximum amount, that change there was merely put in because we have a provision here to either, by town meeting action in subsequent years, either to raise or to lower the percentage of senior citizen exemption. And there's two parts to that, one of which is the amount, and then there's a maximum limitation. And we just forgot in one sentence the word maximum limitation, so it just clarifies what the intent was. And then the last section on severability is just one of those catch-all things that's nice to put in there so that if somebody rules that there's some small little part of this that makes it or might make it unconstitutional, that in fact can be removed so that the senior citizens can get the benefit without having to start from ground zero to go through this process all over again. So with that, I'd like to get into
a point of order. point of order?
Yes, sir. I hope.
What's the point of order?
The provision that Mr. Child referred to there, and I think it's Section 4 concerning amending the amount of the tax, calls for a two-thirds majority. I'm just confused as to how a proposal...
This is not a point of order, sir.
It's a point of order,
it's a question in debate. And
no, I'm wondering how... it is a point of order, sir.
No, it's not a point of order, and you're out of order.
But responding,
you got to handle what's coming, right?
I just say that since this is a home rule petition to go for the legislature has a history of being able to establish voting provisions, for example, within the zoning. And zoning laws, we know that we have to get a two-thirds vote to make a change in our zoning bylaws. So this is nothing new. And if the legislature passes this, we're just suggesting that there should be stability in the senior exemption and not something that sort of flows with between 51 and 49% of the people sort of in favor of it. So one year you have it, one year you don't have it. So that's the idea. It's perfectly within the legislature's prerogative to accept that or not to accept that. So now, if we can get into the presentation. Bear with me, and I think most of your questions will be answered, and I appreciate all of you coming out tonight. I know many of you came out because you're very skeptical, and I'm going to hope to convince you of the business case that senior real estate tax exemption is a win-win for Sudbury. This is not taking from one and giving to the other. It's a business proposition, and that's very important to my support and my thinking about why this is right. Before I get into the whole rationale, I want to thank deeply the team, next slide, the team that helped assemble you tonight and helped with all the work in putting this together. We have some magnificent people of this town rising up and wanting to help, wanting to do something important for the community and for senior citizens in the community. And the list is long, and this list is not complete. There are many people who have been called by their friends and have done work calling other friends. There are people who will probably always remain unknown who have done work to help support this article. Next slide. The whole purpose of this proposal is to begin a process of breaking the cycle of high taxation leading to the exodus of people when their children leave school. They become empty nesters. They leave school, sell their homes to young families with children, further pressuring the school budgets and further pressuring the town budgets, causing needs for raising taxes and override votes, further pressuring senior citizens out of town, and the cycle goes on and on. We're trying to break that cycle in a win-win basis for Sudbury. So we're trying to create some incentives so that people, hopefully as early as 45, although when we're going to talk about some statistics later on, we're not going to be talking about those, will start to think in their mind. You know, when I get to 60, if I'm still in Sudbury, I can still be in Sudbury, and then I will see significant tax relief. So I can start thinking about that in my planning in terms of, is this the community that I want to remain in for the rest of my life? Or are we going to not provide this incentive and continue the current situation where we have many seniors leaving? And so what we're trying to do here is to replace, and we're going to talk about where these numbers came from in the presentation in a few minutes, a $9,150 cost for each new student in the weighted average kindergarten through 12th grade, including Minuteman Tech, all the students, the weighted average for last fiscal year, not the coming budget, because all our numbers were based on last fiscal year. So the question is, as to this trade-off, you have the empty nesters, if you can give a whole bunch of them, and everyone is valuable, an incentive to stay around, the costs, and we're going to talk where these numbers come from, about $3,000 on average of a person, or a household, I'm sorry, and then you're eliminating these other expenses, it's a win-win proposition. So let's get into the beginning of the financial analysis and the financial basis for this. Let's first talk about Sudbury's study. And this, if could you blow that up enlarge? Can you enlarge? No, can't. Okay. This the assessing department, when after the article was submitted to the town, did a study basing their study on two pieces of data. First of all, I guess as they read the Warren article, they thought that every household would be entitled to the maximum benefit. So they did a study and said every house would get the maximum. And I think we all know from our experience that there are, and the maximum benefit in this article is set at the amount of taxes, half the amount of the taxes on the average house. And we know that there's a whole lot of houses below the average, and then there's houses above the average. So right away, we have this analysis. They're all at the maximum, and then for the number of houses, they pick a number of households on a mailing list from the Council on Aging, not necessarily just single-family homes within Sudbury. And I guess that's the next slide. So this is gone real quick. So that's the points I've just made, which are it assumes this maximum benefit, which isn't part of the motion. So we go to the next slide now. So we did, when we talk about this distribution of houses, we actually did the full study of all 5,245 properties in town that are single-family residences, and we actually looked at the distribution, and this is just a summary of the distribution, and again, some of you will have trouble seeing this, but the summary of this distribution shows in the left columns here the valuation range, then you have for all single-family houses, and then on the right-hand side, you have the single-family houses for residents 60 and older. And so one of the things you see here is that while 61% of the houses in Sudbury are below this average value, in other words, should not have been charged off at the maximum, for the seniors, it's actually 76% of them are below that average. This chart also shows that seniors typically live in the lower valued houses. And one of the reasons that's important is because when I was talking about this proposal with Mrs. Hafner, who's the in charge of assessing, she's telling me that it's the lower valued houses in Sudbury, the ones that we see so many seniors occupying, they're the ones that are probably the most undervalued in the next revaluation. I think I heard her say, and she'll correct me, I'm sure, if I'm wrong, but what I heard her say was that those are the ones that are probably going to get raised in the next revaluation to bring them more in line with the market value. So, again, more pressure on seniors coming as a result of the need for the town to have full and fair valuation. That's part of the law. And further driving many seniors out of town and bringing in families with children to replace them. And as I said, we're trying to break that cycle. So what our study, that study that I just showed, said is basically that instead of all the houses getting the maximum benefit, there's only about 24% of them getting the maximum $4,000 benefit. And so that's why we come up with different numbers, significantly different numbers. And yet, next slide. We have a study that, based on false assumptions, bad numbers, doesn't discuss the benefits at all, and yet as recently as a couple of nights ago when I was discussing this proposal with selectmen, he told me it was the basis of on that $6 million cost for this project, perhaps among others, one of the reasons why they were against it. So in spite of the fact that we provided them with some of this other information, apparently didn't get read or want to be believed. Let's compare the proponent study in the next slide. We took a total of 12,917 census records from the town. That's everyone in town 17 years of age and older. By state law, we don't have access to the records for anyone below that. We purchased those from the town. And as I said, we have the assessor's property records, a total of 6,643. Then we merged the databases, and the town has never done this before. We merged the database for the persons over 60, so we could identify the houses where there was one or more residents that was 60 or over. And then we did detailed analytical studies, property by property, person by person. And then we also, and we'll talk later on, we did a benefit assessment, this trade-off I've talked about in terms of the cost of education versus the cost of providing retention incentives to the seniors. So let's move to the first major finding from the census data. This is an astounding chart that we're going to talk a lot about tonight. This is the heart of this proposal, and we're going to kind of summarize it a little bit more. What this bar chart is that for every year of age, it shows how many people in Sudbury have that birthday, and it was as of the beginning of this town meeting, so what we had the cutoff from, you know, April 7th to April 6th of the next year. So that's the distribution, and what you see is the distribution peaks just shortly before age 45, and then dramatic fall-offs. In fact, the most dramatic fall-offs are between then and age roughly about 60, maybe 62, and then you have sort of a small drop-off. And what this chart also says, that in terms of gross numbers of people, and we're trying to deal with this issue of the empty nesters being replaced by all the children, if you targeted, were to target incentives narrowly, those 70 or above, 65 and above, there's just so few people there that are affected that you're not addressing the question of how do you create some incentives for this other group to stay in town. So the operating thesis that we're going to talk a little bit more about, and that is that if you begin at 60, the people start making dramatic moves in their early 50s, and that they can, that that's not such a long period of time that they can start to see for themselves there's a benefit down here, that it has the possibility to influence their decision to stay or to abandon Sudbury for lower tax situations. Interesting fact, when we were getting the petition article to put this on the warrant, one of the people we asked is Chief Dunn, and Chief said, "You're too late. I had to move out of town. The taxes are too high. Move to another community, lower taxes." That's the reality. I'm sure he loves this town, but the taxes were too high, thinking about retirement living for himself. So this is the population distribution. What we did to make it a little bit more manageable in the next slide is to accumulate those little bars in five-year buckets, if you will. So those little buckets are in those five-year age brackets. And so we have the total number of people in those age brackets, and then we're showing the decrease in each one. And you see the major decreases is that 56 to 60, and then 61 to 65. And so that's the group that, you know, particularly is, you know, you want to get some incentives to retain them. And you'd also like to be dealing with, I mean, you'd like to be dealing with the whole group, but on a practical basis, I think it's a lot less likely that someone that, let's say, is maybe 45 years old is going to be motivated by something that's happening 15 years hence. So as we move to the next slide, this is a little bit maybe easier to kind of visualize what that was. So when we looked at, when we talked about the difference between each one, that's just the difference from, there's the almost 2,000 people in the category of 41 to 45. We had 1,924. and between 45 and 50, there's 1,650 people, and that red bar up there is the number of people that left town. And then the next bar down below that is the people that left town. And what all this is showing is that, you know, to find the population that could be affected, you don't just add those numbers, because that's not the whole picture. It's really, if you're looking at from where people are at 41 to 45, and if that were straight across, if we were successful so nobody left, that line would be straight across, right? Well, so all those people then who have left during this period of time are the people that we're hoping to influence. Now, the total population decreased then by age range, as I said, is sort of illustrated in this slide. And so when we talk about, we're going to talk about what populations might be affected, and those are the numbers of people that we'll be adding up. What do we know about empty nesters when they leave? Well, they're typically replaced by families with school-age children, and let's talk about what that means to Sudbury. We've alluded to it before, but where did those numbers come from? How real are they? Well, if you were to look in your warrant tonight, every one of those numbers is in tonight's warrant. That is the budget for K through 8 last year, the number of students, and then simple mathematics, the cost per student. We have the Lincoln Sudbury. There, that's the budget. That's their entire budget. It's a little bit. We have 85% of the responsibility, but it's close enough. $10,465 is their average cost, and then we have the Minuteman Tech, $19,850, because we have so few students there. Probably some of that's sort of a fixed cost, but this is the number that we use. And what does that number mean to Sudbury? That means that when that empty nester leaves his house and sells it to a family that's coming in with children, depending on how many there are, we're going to get an increased cost of $9,000, $18,000, $27,000, and in some cases $36,000 more a year just from that transaction alone. Now, it seems as a business proposition is the right thing to do. If we could provide some incentives so that seniors can remain in town, feel more comfortable with their situation in town, we could break this cycle. And this is the cycle. This is what's driving the taxes to be increasing, putting all the pressure on the budget. So that's what we're trying to do here. There are substantial financial benefits from a program that can reduce the exodus, and that it, and in fact has the potential, because I've heard this said a number of questions we're going to talk about later, but people are saying, well, you know, what would happen if a whole bunch of seniors wanted to come to Sudbury? Well, that would help. That would create the kind of win-win, and we'll talk about why that is more. One of the other things all those charts showed of the population distribution is that an effective program must provide incentives before age 65, because all the drop-off in population happens before. You could almost argue from a business proposition that once people are about 65 or 70, they've already made a decision. They're here as long as they can stay, more or less. So it's not that population that you could probably influence as much. So that's why we have the age 60 is in terms of qualification. So you're impacting directly 60 and over, and you're trying to influence those people probably starting around age 50, 51, something like that, to start thinking about where they would be when they retire, rather than starting to think about the plans they want to make, perhaps buying that second home or whatever, so they have a place that they can go to leave Sudbury when they quit working. So let's talk some more then about our detailed study, and we talked about some of that again before, and let's just talk about then the result of the property-by-property study, and that's on the next slide. And there we go. Take off. So this, we had this chart before, so hit the next one again. I just want to remind you about it. That's the distribution of houses. This is, if you want more of a distribution, if somebody has questions later on, we can show you where they are all the way up to $1 million and, you know, who owns the homes, whether they're seniors or not. But I don't think you'll need that data, but we have it. If you're going to have questions, it's here. Next slide. Now, doing that property by property evaluation and using the rule in the article, 50% tax reduction, but no more than 50% of the average value maximum, which was $4,025 from Mrs. Hafner's study. We did that property by property, and then here we're showing the value of the houses, and then, you know, we sort of summarized the data because we didn't think you wanted to look at all 1,319 entries. So we just summarized it into these categories, and the total of the tax reductions from this program, the $4,143,000. Sounds like a big number. A lot of people say, how can we possibly afford this? And we're going to be talking about that. We also did a study. There have been some concerns, some questions, and people are free to inquire or make motions or whatever they want to do. What's the impact for different age cutoffs? So we have the data here, and we're not trying to hide anything, and this is the data. So the data shows that if you were to make the age 62, for example, the cost of the program would go down to about $3.4 million. And if you made it 65, it'd go down about $2.7 million. If you forgot that there were benefits, the cost could be dramatically reduced by making more stringent requirements, but then you'd be losing the incentive power against those people who are the ones who are moving out as they become empty nesters. So the business proposition says it should be age 60. But again, here's the data of, you know, people, and if this all feels something else. Now, move to the next slide. That's one of the charts that the Finance Committee put together, which I think is very useful to get a perspective on. What does a 50% real estate tax exemption mean if a senior gets that? Well, the town's operating departments with the benefits represent 26% of the operating budget, and this is basically a picture out of the an image of what was in the town report. And I have that statistic. It's not on the previous chart. We'll see it later. But it turns out that it's about 54% of the average senior citizen is going to end up paying about 54% of their taxes. So they're paying over twice the 26% that's the operating budget. And what does that mean? It means that even with the exemption, the average senior, half of their money is going to support the Sudbury schools. Moving along. We calculated that $4,143,000 and divided that by the number of properties. And by the way, I want to qualify for just a minute that $4,143,000. There's some assumptions there, and those are worst-case assumptions. Those assumptions are that every single house where there was someone 60 or older residing, that they were an owner of 50% or more of the property, and we know that that's not the case. We know that, for example, sometimes there are elderly people living with their children in their homes. They would not qualify, not being owners. We know from some of our outreach efforts that in some cases, some of the houses that we have in this sample have already been replaced by new people who have moved in, younger families with children, and so they wouldn't qualify as well. So this is sort of the worst case situation. But at $4,143,000, if you divide it by the 1,319 properties, that's an average incentive cost, the cost of this program, of $3,142 versus those education costs that we mentioned before, $9,000, $18,000, $20,000, $27,000 or more if those people leave town and are replaced with families with children. And so what all this means to Sudbury is that, as I said earlier, seniors are going to be paying 54.2% of their normal taxes. Town services consume 26% of the budget, so that more, and it's very important, more than half the money that the senior citizens are going to be paying in their taxes is going to go to support the schools. And that's a very fair proposition in terms of their responsibility. It's a shift in resources from the older generation to the younger generation to educate their children. And let me talk about some of the reactions to Article 54. And these are just clips from emails that were sent to SudburyTaxRelief@msn.com. Please let me know as much as possible when Article 54 comes up, town meeting. I'm a senior citizen who lived here for 41 years and would like to stay here. Thank you. Next. It would be nice to have some relief after recent years of paying such high taxes. It would certainly make the property taxes more equitable. Long time coming. I don't vote at town elections anymore because when I did turn out to vote against Prop 2 overrides, the nay side always lost to the 30-40-ish well-heeled crowd with babes in arms. It's been pretty depressing as we are barely hanging on. Thanks, and I hope this works. Another one. Hello, Sudbury Town Meeting.
The petitioner is basically putting out comments that people, we don't know who these people are, they're not having to give the name and address. This seems very
odd. Hold. Let him make his point of order. We don't need any hissing, booing, or anything else. Let's go. Yes, sir, go ahead. Make your point of order.
My point is that if people want to make comments on the motion, I have no problem with that. But I think they should be done in a context where the person identifies himself at town meeting and makes their own point for themselves.
Well, maybe you'd like it that way, but the problem is that this is not a court of law. There's no rules of hearsay or anything else. And as one of my predecessors once said, you have a right to come up here and quote the Bible, the Constitution, or whatever you want. Mr. Tyler is perfectly within his rights to quote and quote from documents, unauthored, authors not revealed, or anything. If someone does that, every voter can decide what weight to give the argument if the real proponent isn't named. But there's nothing wrong with that argument. I'm sorry, sir, your point of order is not well taken. Go ahead, Mr. Tyler. Now, wait a minute. Now, let's stop the applause for the moderator. You know, the moderator likes laughter, but not applause. Now, look, but we're getting. I understand we've got a high-strung issue here. Mr. Tyler, this is not taking away from your time. You have approximately 4 minutes left, however. Decorum and debate is a very important thing. And in this town, I mean, I've had the privilege to hold this gavel now 19 years. And the one thing I hope we're going to do tonight is do what Sudbury traditionally does. I know there's strong disagreements about this issue, but let's all keep it at a very high plane while we talk about it. And if anybody decides not to keep it at a high plane, I would remind you the moderator has a right to sit them down. And under the state law, if they don't sit down, the chief and his people incarcerate them for the balance of the meeting. And I would remind you the balance of this meeting is going to May. So I would not get incarcerated. But all seriousness, so let's keep it on a high plane. Laughter and applause, fine. And the other stuff, let's forget it. Go ahead, Mr. Tyler.
Thank you. How many minutes did you say?
Four.
You have about four left.
Would I be pushing it if I tried to finish this presentation, which is going to take a little more than 4 minutes, and ask your... Could I request...
Mr. Tyler, just run out your 4 minutes.
Okay, all right. So I just want to respond that I didn't get the permission of people to put their names in here, and I didn't have time to, and that's why they're not in here. I thought it was fair game to quote, and I didn't think it was fair game to quote their names without their permission. Hello, Sudbury Town Meeting people. What a great idea to let us live longer in our house as long as we want. Thanks. Let me know when Article 54 is coming. We will be there. Next. Yes, we are all interested in getting tax relief for our property. Currently, it takes 4 of 12 of our Social Security checks to pay for our property tax. Please let me know when this warrant will be up for debate. Also, if there's anything that we can do to sign in case we're unable to defend, of course, we don't have absentee ballots. Thanks for all you're doing to help. Next one. Hi, I received notification by mail. Please give us the date of the vote. I would like to volunteer to help get out the vote. We were considering the affordability to stay in Sudbury when my wife retires soon. We love this town and very excited about the news. That's the kind of reaction we're hoping to get. We want to stay in the town. We're excited about the news. Next, your proposal is exactly what the town of Sudbury needs. It would certainly help seniors like me stay in Sudbury, where we have lived 28 years. I also agree with Richard Payne that the cost would be offset by the reduced growth in the population of our school system. Hopefully, the older voters will attend town meeting this year and vote in favor. It's too bad the FinCon can't see it as this is a good proposal. I'm sure if I put my house on the market, it would be sold very quick to a family with children. Now let's talk about some of the frequently asked questions. Is there any precedent to providing broad tax relief to residential property? In other words, is this something that's been done before? The answer is that Massachusetts General Law Chapter 59, Section 5C, provides for any community, Sudbury could be one, could provide an exemption to every resident homeowner equal to up to 20% of the assessed value for all Class 1 residential property. Now, I've attended many selectmen's meetings when they're setting the tax rate and have urged the selectmen to do this. And I've urged them to do this because while not having the data, in my mind, I thought that the seniors would benefit disproportionately from that proposal because they tend to live in the smaller and the lesser valued homes. But they saw fit not to implement this, so we haven't got that tax relief. The next slide is merely just for those, there's always somebody doubting, well, where do you make that one up? This is the text of the article, the statute for the exemptions for residential real property in cities and towns. That's the statute I referred to. Now, what have the courts said about these things, about providing real estate tax exemption to classes of person? Well, the Supreme Judicial Court has approved existing real estate exemptions when they were challenged. They don't always, they don't look at things unless they're challenged. Furthermore, the court has been known to change its opinions as new arguments are presented. And if we want to get into some of those, and we're going to skip through them, but there's going to be some people saying, oh, in fact, Mr. Kenny and I had some long conversations the other night where he's bringing up new issues of, oh, this is unconstitutional and all this kind of stuff. And so I went back because I had done the research before, and I thought I'd just select a few of the quotes where the Supreme Judicial Court has said, yes, you can do it, and here's the situations. The next slide, again, the Supreme Court in a couple of cases opining on exemptions, and then in the last case, how their opinions change. In 1962, the Supreme Judicial Court said you couldn't do some sort of broad-scale exemption, and yet 17 years later, in 1979, the legislature enacted that broad residential exemption that I talked about. So those past opinions, whatever might be said about constitutionality, don't apply to what's in front of you now until such time as it might be challenged, if there are concerns that this is somehow discriminating against some class of voters in the town. What are some of the other frequently asked questions?
Mr. Tyler, you have now exhausted your time. How much more time do you need?
I would say 7 minutes.
No.
How many people have an objection to the 7 minutes? How many don't? The don'ts are in the majority.
Thank you. Again, and I'm
all right, Mr. Tower, 7 minutes. Right.
7 minutes.
Go.
Frequently asked questions. What if Sudbury becomes a magnet for senior citizens qualifying for senior tax exemption? Shouldn't there be a 5 or 10 year residency requirement? Answer. This would result in an even greater win-win for Sudbury. There would be more empty nest senior citizens supporting the schools with their tax payments. Senior taxes would be reasonable and budget growth contained. What better result could there be? Next question. What if I want to continue paying full taxes? Will I be forced to take the senior exemption? You got laughter. Absolutely not. The senior citizen tax exemption is totally voluntary, and those of you that feel like if you're in the category that would qualify that you want to pay, it's your option. What's the cost of providing senior tax relief in relation to Sudbury's fiscal 2003 operating budget of $63.4 million? The absolute worst case, I told you some of the dimensions of that, all those homes qualifying, we know some wouldn't, and that there weren't any offsetting benefits, the cost $4.1 million is 6.5% of the budget. Now, what's the population most likely influenced by a proposal like this? It's not that full graph that I had before. It's really more the 45 and above ages, and really it's or the 51 and above ages, I'm sorry. And so we've used for the next studies as a baseline the kind of the population in the 45 to 50 age group, and then we're talking about the decreases for each of these groups. So when we talk about the number of people that are likely to be influenced by this, that's where the numbers are. It's just the summation of all those red bars there. Next slide. 2,992 people are represented by those red bars on the previous chart. And then there's the age range, if you will, from, you know, all those bars of people that want the specific analysis. So what's the break-even analysis? Well, we have $4,143,000 in costs. Now, we heard the housing authority last night say that their experience was in their family housing 1.6 students per home. So that's probably down there on the low end of where we'd be. $14,650 then to educate that average home family full of children. So the number of homes to break even, homes that would be influenced to remain empty nesters, 283. On the other hand, if in these homes are replaced by families with two or two and a half or even as many as three children, you can see that the number of homes to break even is dramatically less. So we have 2,992 people potentially influenced by the senior incentive, meaningful tax relief when you turn 60. It's not means tested. You don't have to plead poverty. You don't have to come on your hands and knees. An entitlement. And therefore, it's likely to affect the calculus that you make as to staying or not staying in Sudbury. And you only need to offset that anywhere from 151 to 283 houses to remain occupied by those people to break even. It's a compelling statistic. It's a compelling number. This proposal is clearly the right thing for senior citizens who've been bearing heavy, heavy burdens of taxation for many years, suffering as a result. It's the right thing for Sudbury's taxpayers because it's going to control the budget growth and if we have an in-migration of seniors taking advantage of this wonderful deal, be even better. And frankly, it's just, besides all the financial calculus from the people that I've talked to and the seniors that are under pressure because of their financial situations and whatnot, I know it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do for our seniors as a community. They built this community. The community is what it is because they've been here and they made it. And it's just a shame that so many of them are forced out by these high taxes. I ask for your vote for Article 54. Hey, vote for 45 too, but 54, sorry. I'm clearly to the end. As the time permits, I'll be available to answer your questions. Thank you.
Finance Committee.
Hutchinson. Hi, my name is Don Hutchinson. I'm a member of the Finance Committee. I live in Pendleton Road in Sudbury. I think that obviously you can see I'm a senior citizen, and so I can be influenced by many of the factors that were described tonight. But on the other hand, I think there are additional factors which need to be considered, which I commend Ralph for his for many of the arguments he's put forward. There's clearly a problem, but it's one thing to identify a problem and another totally different thing to identify the best and most effective solution. I would say that there are some factors which are unclear in the proposal and in the article. Ralph sort of flipped in and out of the issue of means testing. It's not in the article, and that has an impact. I would also say that I doubt if there's anything that really is a win-win situation, because there is no free lunch anywhere. And I think that if the schools are to be maintained at the current levels of spending, then the taxes for people coming into who have children in the school system will go up, and I suspect all the school values will deteriorate, and a large percentage of the value of your houses, which is, in many people is your largest single asset, that may go down. I bought a house in Sudbury in 1971. I paid $66,000 for it, and it's now worth 8 to 9 times that value. And that is a factor to consider. So, other than that, I would not particularly dispute many of the arguments that, that Ralph has put forward. I think there are some flaws statistically. I'm not sure that taxes are the only reason that people move out. I think people move out of Sudbury because, like me, they have a substantial asset and they want to be able to exchange that for money. So whether you change the tax rate or not will have an effect, but it is not the only factor. I would also say when you look at the chart on the distribution of the ages of people, unfortunately, that is not the sole reason why there are fewer people at the older ages. Some of us have an unfortunate habit of dying off. I would also say that the Finance Committee, of which I'm a member, is very conscious of this problem. They want to study it. They have studied it. I put a fair amount of effort into looking at the numbers. And many of the numbers that Ralph came up with have been discussed by the Finance Committee. We are aware of them. But let me bring up some factors for you to consider. And these are factors which I have looked at, and both as a member of the Finance Committee and as an individual senior citizen. The factors that I urge you to look at are, first of all, is timing. The timing is unfortunate. For those of you who are here on Monday, the vote was to postpone the town meeting because faced with a reduction in revenue receipts of between $347 to $1 million, we could not put together a new budget and have it available for a town meeting, so we had to ask for another 6 weeks. Now, this reduction here, we're talking of a matter of $4 million, or if you take Ralph's numbers, and I mean, you can argue as well as $4 million or $6 million, I think we would have a lot of difficulty in developing a budget for the town, which is $4 million. Don't forget, $4 million less than what it was. Don't forget, we spent from October through to February, March, working out how to allocate the budget. The Finance Committee has spent a lot of time talking with the citizens, talking with the various committees. I'm not quite clear why this proposal, this article, was not proposed before January. And I think that had it been proposed before January, we could have perhaps built in some assumptions and looked at it. So one of the other problems about timing is this is clearly not a good year to start making major changes in the way taxes are developed. Everyone here knows the problems that the state has. Everyone knows the uncertainty of what the budget will provide. And to add another layer of uncertainty and problems on top of that. Talking about uncertainty, uncertainty itself is a major problem because that's why we postponed the budget. And we've also talked about here that it will need legislative action and may or may not be unconstitutional. But what that does, it creates uncertainty. And where you get uncertainty, here we have Sudbury, which has the highest possible rating for our bonds in the Commonwealth. What the bond market hates is uncertainty of any kind. And the biggest uncertainty is what is going to happen to the Sudbury budget. We've had a reputation that we keep the budget financed properly and we live up to our commitments. If we have a level of uncertainty here, there will be a price to be paid. So I also note that the article has undergone several changes since it was proposed. And I think we ought to be careful about this. This all adds to the uncertainty as to when this will go into effect, when it will happen. We have to, the fiscal year starts in July. We have to have a, hopefully at the town meeting May 21st, we will have a much better idea. For those of you who are here on Monday, we heard Susan Pope talking about the very tight schedule the legislature has.
Mr. Hudson, so your 5 minutes are up. How much longer do you need?
About 2 minutes.
Any objection to 2 minutes from the Finance Committee? Please proceed, sir.
Okay, thank you. One thing is, because the legislature was busy, I doubt if we'll have any kind of legislation on this before the fiscal year starts. And in that same line, I would ask you to take a look at the turmoil that's in New Hampshire and Vermont when the legislature gets into the question of property taxes and the cost of education. It's a turmoil and will cause trouble. But I would like to end up with saying the most important thing to me is something which is a concept which we need to think about. It's a social contract. The social contract is where a community gets together to support the members individually and collectively. The social contract in Sudbury and in Massachusetts is that the citizens get together to support education, and we pay for education. We've been paying for education for a long time. It's part of the responsibility for the community. Other examples are Social Security, which all seniors benefit from Medicare, and those are, if you start getting into saying who should be paying for what and who should be getting what, you have some problems. So I think I would like to say that there's a very real problem here. I think we need to study it. We need to move carefully and with a lot of care in this matter. and want to watch the timing, and I would say this is not the time to inject this note here of uncertainty, of confusion, and lack of clarity. So I would urge you to reconsider this motion, this article, and to not support it. Thank you.
Selectman, Mr. Dubinsky.
Thank you very much, John Dubinsky, 222 Boston Post Road. And the Board of Selectmen is strongly against this article. We're strongly in favor of senior tax relief, but it has to be fair and equitable to everyone in the community. We find this article flawed in three ways: technically, legally, and more importantly, socially. Sudbury has been supporting seniors since ever I've been in town, and we've been supporting seniors through the Senior Center. And if you're here Monday evening, you heard a lot of the great things that go on in the Senior Center. The volunteers that work there, the outreach that the seniors in the community have, it's a great, great place. There's a tax work-off program. It's minor, but it's in place, and we work very hard to get the state to pass that. And some of the seniors in town do benefit from that, and the townspeople benefit from that, where seniors interface with the citizens of Sudbury providing services. The Frost Farm project, as you know, the town donated the property up at Frost Farm so we could build moderate income housing for seniors, and as we talked on Monday evening, it's very successful. And one of the interesting things about this article that those seniors that live in Frost Farm will not be eligible for this tax program. The tax deferral program, which we passed last year with the help of our state senator and state rep, which allows seniors to stay in their home and then pay the back taxes when the home is sold. And finally, not finally, but also the town meeting has been very active in passing zoning bylaws that allow cluster housing for over 55 and over, and a perfect example of that is Springhouse Pond down behind the former Star Market. And then finally, the council agent. And finally, the Council on Aging, which has been a very, very active group in town, and the board and the townspeople have been working very hard in outreach to the council. What I want to do is give an overview of Article 54, and Selectman Lupinian is going to really address the process. And one of the things about the process is you're all here, which I think is really great, but there have been no public hearings. There's no outreach to the community to really decide, as Mr. Hutchison said, is this the best way to go? As I said clearly in the outset, we believe there needs to be some sort of senior tax relief, but is this the fair and equitable way to do it? And you need to understand that. So Selectman Lupinian is going to discuss that. We'll talk a little bit about the construct of the article. I think there's a lot of inequities in the article, and we want to talk about that briefly. We'll talk about the legal issues. There's been some discussion that it's constitutional. I don't believe it's constitutional. We have to go through the Attorney General's office, the state legislature, and the Department of Revenue. Your administrative issues. This has put a tremendous strain on the assessor's office. There'll be issues with the overlay account and things like that, which I'll discuss briefly. Financial impact. While Mr. Tyler gave a very detailed, very interesting presentation, he didn't really say what the financial impact would be on the average homeowner who is not 16 above. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I think you'd be surprised what that's going to do to your taxes. And then finally, I think more importantly, I think, and I agree with Mr. Hutchison, I'm not a senior citizen yet, but I'm a few years behind you. But it's really a sense of community. What is Sudbury really about? And I think it's tremendous you're all out here. It shows that you're concerned. But what is our sense of community? And I think a social contract is very important. The construct of the article. It only applies to single-family housing. It doesn't apply to Frost Farm. It doesn't apply to Springhouse Farm, where there are seniors. There's probably 100 seniors living in town who will not qualify for this tax exemption. It's not means tested. Just because someone's over 60 and he can be a CEO making $200,000 or $300,000, he gets a tax exemption on his house. While the firefighter, school teacher, or a family with four children only making $50,000 or $60,000 or maybe $70,000, they don't get a tax break. And I don't think that's fair. It's open to new seniors. A new CEO can move to Sudbury from California and buy a $1 million home and get a tax break, while a firefighter, a teacher, or someone similar who's lived in town for 20 or 30 years does not get that similar tax break. And then finally, not finally, we're passing a significant financial article here, but there's been no ballot approval. Basically, it's approval of town meeting. Typically, when we do something significant financially in town, we have a two-step process, town meeting and the ballot. And then finally, this is something interesting. The amendment to the article takes a two-thirds vote, where the article itself only takes a majority vote. And after a public hearing and town meeting approval, which this article had no public hearing with the Board of Selectmen or the Finance Committee, which an amendment requires, an amendment can increase the amount from 50% higher at a year's any time in a year. It would take 4 years to decrease the amount. So I think that seems inequitable. Next slide. I want to talk a little bit about legal issues, and I think you can hear a little bit about that. First, if we pass this tonight, it has to go to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General has to approve it. And I think the Attorney General is going to look at this very closely, because this will be precedent-setting in Massachusetts. Secondarily, the House of Representatives and the Senate needs to approve this. And Mayor Menino was on the Hill on Monday trying to get tax relief for the city of Boston, and the governor is very clear. He said, I'll give you tax relief, but you have to put it to the ballot. We want the general public to talk about it. We don't want mayors, councils, and selectmen coming to the legislature and asking for something without the general public voting at the ballot. So I think that's something you need to think about. Challenges from special interests. If we pass this, will there be special interests throughout the Commonwealth attacking Sudbury? We'll need to defend ourselves through legal costs and legal ramifications that this is what we've done is correct and constitutional, and that could tie up town budget and town council. And then finally, Department of Revenue approval. Mr. Tyler quoted the law correctly, but the Department of Revenue only allows 4 exemptions, and this would be a 5th exemption that would not be allowed by the Department of Revenue. Administrative issues. I know Maureen Hafner is going to talk a little bit about the impact on the assessors, but this has to be certified.
Mr. Kavinsky, you run your 5 minutes. How much longer do you need?
One more?
How many? 3. Any objection? I see none. Go ahead.
It would have to be quarterly recertified. It would take manpower from the Fish and Manpower and Assessor's Department, new software and support systems. Assessors would have to review 5,200 bills every quarter. How does this get enforced? What are the penalties for someone cheating? Is there an appeals process? And how does that all going to work? That's not spelled out here. And then finally, this is going to increase the overlay amount, and the overlay amount is going to increase that we'll be taking money from the budget. The financial impact. This basically shifts the tax burden from everyone above 60 to everyone below 60. And as Don pointed out, this is going to have a significant impact because it's going to raise taxes for people who are under 60. It's going to decrease property values because people now will not want to come to Sudbury. Our tax rate is very high now. We first admit it because I vote my own tax raises and your tax raises. Our taxes are probably some of the 5 highest in the state, so this is going to make it more higher and harder for people to live in Sudbury. The number that Mr. Tyler didn't talk about was the increase on the average household. So the average household in Sudbury is about $400,000 to $400,000. Your tax rate would go up an additional $900. And that would be, and I think there's some debate, well, that's equivalent to a $4 to $6 million override. So we basically added to people below the age of 60 the equivalent of $4 to $6 million override on their taxes. I'd say one of the things here is that I don't think age really equates to the ability to pay. As I said earlier, someone could be a CEO and make a couple $100,000 and be over 60, while a firefighter below 60 may not be able to pay equivalently. And then finally, in the financial impact, the Board of Assessors is going to have an additional $900,000 in the overlay account, which would be an approximately $1 million that won't be available for town services.
And finally, I'll be very quickly, and this is actually the most important slide to me, that the sense of our community. And I feel this really is divisive, and it's really going to be a generational thing. We've had generational equality in town ever since I've been here. And this, to me, pits people above 60 and people below 60. We've all had kids, most of us have children going through school. Our homes and our families are vital to us, and they're here because we all work together. And I think this is really going to sort of cause generational inequality, and that really disturbs me. And finally, what is Sudbury? Sudbury is people. It's seniors, it's firefighters, it's teachers, municipal employees. It's all of us together. It's working together as a community. It's our schools. Our schools really make this community what it is. That's what makes our property values what they are. It makes Don's house go from the $60,000 to the $800,000 in electing retirement, Don. That sounds pretty good. The environment. We had a great presentation Monday evening about the open space, the sense of rural here, the rural roads. We protected our scenic roads. I think it's something that brings us all to Sudbury, something that we really value. And I want people to stay here, but we need to work as a community. And fairness. There's a famous tax decision called the Sudbury decision, which really set the tone for fairness in taxation in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And Sudbury led the charge there. And I hope people tonight will lead the charge and be fair and equitable in taxes. The board strongly opposes this article, but we strongly are in favor of tax equity that's equal and fair to seniors. And I urge you, there's going to be a lot of discussion this evening. I want people to think with their hearts and minds, perhaps not with your wallet, because Sudbury's a great place, and let's not tear it apart over issues that I think we need to study, we need to understand, we need to find an equitable way to solve this tax crisis for seniors. Thank you.
His opinion.
Good evening. My name is Kirsten Pinion. I live on Harness Lane. Having many friends and acquaintances of all ages here tonight, whom I serve on the Board of Selectmen, and for my upbringing, a tremendous amount of respect for my elders, I find this a somewhat daunting discussion. Tonight, we are for the first time, never having heard this particular presentation before, that on the surface is very attractive to our seniors. It provides a 50% reduction in your property tax. What a deal. If this were the lottery, we'd all feel very lucky. If this were a car dealership, we might be a little bit more skeptical. And if this were a telemarketer, you'd have hung up by now. Having said that, there are, as you've been told, some very specific deficiencies in this proposal. And the first, and not the least, is the process by which this is being brought to the town. You should be cautious and question why this article has been brought to you without any consideration for proper procedure of the standard review process. This proposal did not allow time for public scrutiny through committee review, public hearings, or staff analysis. The boards and committees are required to go through a due diligence process. It is how we operate as a community, and nobody should be exempt from that, no matter what the issue. Town has insisted on that as a part of the public decision-making process. We have gone to great lengths, and you can ask the Housing Authority, great lengths to allow time for dialogue with the public on our own issues. As an example, the Housing Authority, they recently brought forward their proposal, which we thought was possibly a little bit flawed in the process, and they saw the wisdom of that and withdrew it from town meeting. Nobody has had the opportunity to look for errors or unanticipated outcomes. The petitioner just found out last Wednesday that as originally proposed, this article will force an unintended cut of at least $4 to $6 million out of the budget. What else have we overlooked in the rush to push this through without a thorough examination? And additionally, the petitioner again this evening has made additional amendments and corrections, demonstrating the lack of a thorough examination process. This article was added to the warrant at the last minute by petition. It was amended here tonight. This demonstrates uncertainty about this article at all. The petitioner was invited and encouraged to begin the review process last year after town meeting. As a matter of fact, he was asked by the chairman of the board to present his proposal on two separate occasions and chose not to do so. Why did the petitioner feel this proposal did not need to be submitted to the same process as all the others are? The proposal does not include any discussion about being placed on a ballot, which all other major money articles must go through. All financial decisions with major consequences should be approved by voters at the ballot. This article needs more than just town meeting approval. It is strongly suggested that this be placed on a ballot should this pass town meeting. Although taxes are one reason seniors may leave this town, there are additionally other reasons. But if this passes, it will be a reason for those of us who are not seniors to leave, considering the strain on our own property taxes, the devastation of our schools. If they are the hallmark of our community, this will certainly end that. The public safety issues that will come as a result in being forced to downsize an already small enough police, fire, and DPW force. The impact to us is if we had just passed a $6 million override for the next 4 years without any agreement by the rest of the town. There are short-term consequences not fully considered tonight either. What will the tax burden be on others not receiving this exemption? As John just told you, it will be significant. What are the effects on the assessor's office? This is a mind-boggling administrative process, and I don't think this has been well thought through. Had we administered to a process, we might have gotten to this point and been able to suggest something this evening, but we haven't gone through the proper process. The long-term consequences not fully presented or considered have been, have the real estate experts been consulted to predict the impact on your house values? Have the multi-year projections been made on effects to the future town budgets? The answer is no. And finally, those in my generation have worked very, very hard. We are fortunate enough to live in this town and have formed many lasting, lifelong relationships and friendships. We have endured in our adult life many, many challenges just as you did in your generations. We are now facing extraordinary changes in the world today, ones that impact us all as a community. My friends say we should give seniors a tax break, and we all feel guilty. Should we? I think, rather, we should be given the opportunity to work with the seniors to develop a well-thought-out, process-driven solution to senior tax issues. To make any group pay your way seems unfair, but worse, when the proposal has unintended implications and results that are potentially devastating to our community, I think we should go back and talk about it a little more. And on a personal note, you are all gathered here tonight as part of this great community, and it is a great community, and I'm proud to serve this community. You have helped build it, all of you, together. Thank you. You are all wonderful, committed members of the town, and no matter what the outcome this evening, we must continue to work together for the betterment of the town of Sudbury. I am personally insulted by the petitioner's actions, which threatens to divide our town. It is my gravest concern that this article, without the proper process, will divide this town, irreparably damaging relationships that we have built over the course of the last several years since at least I have been active in the community. I am proud to serve. I am proud to continue to serve. I urge your defeat of this article.
The town manager.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I feel compelled just to speak briefly on a point that Mr. Hutchinson raised, and that's the impact, potentially, on Sudbury's credit rating, the rating that helps determine what type of interest we pay when we issue debt. I haven't had a lot of time to take a look at this because up until Wednesday, the proposal was the abatement would be on the taxes, which I don't feel would have as great an impact on the credit rating. After Wednesday, I became aware the amendment was going to be looking at exempting value, property value. For the town, our wealth is our property, is our, in our property value, the same as it is for most of you, your greatest asset. The greatest asset of the town in terms of its credit worthiness is the property value. I can't tell you for certain that it will go down. I haven't had the time to look since Wednesday. We've been working about 16-hour days just getting ready for town meeting. It's certainly something I'd like to look at further. But I do know that uncertainty is something that Wall Street abhors. I do know it's something that credit rating firms don't want to be associated with. They don't want to issue a high credit rating when they're just not sure that a town, what its value and ability to pay will be, or where that community is going in terms of its financial management and outlook. We've had high property value for a long time. Our credit rating was increased several years ago. Some of the changes that tipped us over into AAA, as our peer towns of Concord and Wayland and Weston have similar demographics and high property value, was the change in our financial management and outlook and planning and the way we became so much more coordinated and strategic between the Board of Selectmen, the Finance Committee, and the work of town meeting. We've been able to put together and sell a package that has high property value, good management, stable outlook, convinced the credit rating firms. And again, what that means, Lincoln Sudbury will be issuing a huge amount of debt in the future. The credit rating could make a large difference in the amount of the interest that's charged on those bonds. Someday down the road, we're going to continue to issue more debt, and the debt that's currently held and traded all are affected by our credit rating. It's an important consideration. Again, it would be wonderful to have more time to study this and begin to take a look at the effects this might have on the credit rating. Thank you.
Mr. Kenny, would you give us your views on the questions such as constitutionality, legality, and so forth in this matter?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. It's probably important for you to know how this came about historically. This particular question with regard to taxation is controlled by the state constitution. Without a constitutional provision, neither the state legislature nor cities and towns can impose any taxation. In fact, cities and towns do not have the right to tax. They only have the right to collect the taxes that the state legislature has provided. The state legislature cannot do that unless there is a constitutional provision that allows that. For example, as most of you may be aware, there is a provision for an agricultural exemption under a separate section of the law. The only way that that was allowed to be legislated was by a constitutional amendment in the early 70s allowing exemptions for agricultural properties. Prior to that time, the state legislature could not have done that. This particular article has been raised before in the last few years. It is not only this time, but before it was raised by way of a request for a bylaw. On each occasion that was raised, including this time, the party that was raising that was advised that it would be unconstitutional, that the community itself did not have the right to impose taxation, and notwithstanding that we have a constitutional right under the Home Rule Amendment, we cannot do taxation under the Home Rule Amendment. In this particular instance, the first article that was proposed was a bylaw amendment. That has been changed to a request for legislative approval of a statute that would mandate this particular type of exemption, although the exemption, in fact, would be voluntary on an individual basis. This body does have a right under the Home Rule Amendment to present legislation to the state legislature. The question we have, and so that you people do understand, what you vote tonight will not accomplish that unless the state legislature has the right to impose this taxation statute, or in fact an exemption, which is in fact the taxation statute. The state legislature, in my opinion, and that of many other attorneys whom I respect, is that there is no, and the Department of Revenue, in fact, that there is no constitutional authority to allow for an additional class of exemptions. The only way that that's appropriate, and elderly exemptions are allowed, but they're allowed under the basis of a hardship. But it's not only elderly, it's a hardship for elderly or otherwise. So if you vote this tonight, it will in fact go to the state legislature. When it goes to the state legislature, as the chairman indicated, it will have to pass muster by the Attorney General, by the Department of Revenue, and by House and Senate counsel. I am convinced, based upon my review of the Constitution and the opinions of the Supreme Judicial Court in which questions such as this have been referred by the legislature, that they would in fact consider this to be unconstitutional. Therefore, if you vote for this, it will be, and the selectmen will refer it, and we will send the legislation to the legislature. But I want you to understand, or I'm advising you that it, in all probability, will not be constitutional, and you will not get the relief sought from the legislature without a constitutional amendment.
All right, we're now open to general debate on this matter.
Mr. Moderator?
Ivan Lubash, Barbara Road, motion to amend.
A motion to amend?
Ivan Lubash, Barbara Road. I'd like to put a motion to amend Section 2 qualifications. In the first paragraph, change age 60 to 65. Section 3, exemption amount, change 50%, that's in two places, to 25%. Add the following sentence to the end of the paragraph, quote, the exemption shall be based upon total family income per line 22 of Form 1040, page 1, of less than $70,000, end quote. As I said, sidebar, that 22 is total income before any deductions.
All right, does that amendment, motion to amend, receive a second? It does. Lubash, you're recognized in support of your motion to amend.
Very simply, a bird in hand is worth two in the bush. Secondly, if this, looking at the total article, is illegal, one way to find out and to get something going is to pass it and have the Attorney General and the state legislature take action. I do know from past experience, being a library trustee, that if we don't ask, you'd never get. Thank you.
Mr. Moderator.
All right, anyone else want to be heard on the motion to amend? Mr. Tyler, do you want to be heard on the motion to amend?
Okay.
When I made the presentation before, I tried to make the business case, and the business case says broad incentives are necessary beginning at age 60 if you're going to influence the people who are most likely to move and be replaced from their emptiness with large families of children. Mr. Lubash's proposal is meritorious, but it's not addressing what we're trying to do here, because that type of proposal then would become truly a cost to the town. That is to say that the idea is that if you, you know, plead a certain level of income or something like that, if you're older, you're entitled to it. And so for those people, first of all, that are in that younger age group, moving out, You know, if you're 52 years old and you're thinking about what happens at 65, that just doesn't have an impact on you. It doesn't have an impact at all. That's like, that's just too far out in the future. So I think it's going to defeat any of the benefits that we see coming from this proposal in terms of keeping people in Sudbury. I think that means testing is always, that always sounds nice, and it's, who can argue against that? But in terms of the economic case that I've been making, the family that just was under that and qualified and, let's say, stayed, and therefore their house wasn't replaced by an empty nester, is no more valuable in this concept that we have here than the person that's $5 over that number and sells his house to the family with four children who come in and instead of that $33,100 retention incentive that we've put in there, are replaced perhaps with $27,000 or $30,000 a year in education costs. So wherever you set that line, there's always going to be people that are going to be just a little bit over it, and then the question is, why is it that we want their houses to be filled up with children and not the other ones? So this is talking about something different. This is talking about charity. This is talking about seniors having to lose their dignity. Not a right. You have to come in and say, I'm at this level of income or below. This is all, I think, I'll be corrected if not, a matter of public record, at least to the extent that the tax bill goes out and people can see somebody who's qualified for some sort of exemption. Oh, okay, that's their financial situation. We're saying that in ours, that all seniors are valued. This concept of exempting seniors from taxation may be new to Massachusetts. It's not new in this country. There are other states that have explicit provisions, in some cases excluding all seniors over a certain age from the school levies. So Massachusetts is not at the forefront in this. And yes, this is precedent setting, but this article was on the business case. Mr. Mubash, well-intentioned, is talking about a different situation, trying to limit it, and it's not going to have any of the benefits then that this proposal is attempting to address, nor will it have broad-scale then impact on the population that we're targeting. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion?
I oppose the amendment.
Does anyone else wish to be heard on the motion to amend? That's over on now.
Yes, sir. I'm very pleased. Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I'm very pleased to hear this motion on the to amend. If it had not been made by the gentleman over there, I would have made the same motion. Tax relief should be limited to those citizens who actually require relief. In other words, those who are of limited means and for whom increasing property values and resulting tax increases impose an undue burden. It is for such residents of Sudbury that I believe this article should have been intended and to which such relief should be limited. As has been stated, we are facing considerable budget cuts at the state level, and applying this to all seniors, regardless of means, places too great a burden on the town. Limiting it to those who need it at this time seems a much more prudent proposal. I strongly urge you to support this motion to amend.
Anyone else want to be heard on the motion to amend? That's what we're on now. Okay, yes, ma'am.
Kirsten Van Dyke, 37 Random Road.
You want to be heard, get up to a mic. Yeah. Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to echo the opinion. The new parameters of the amendment proposition I support highly. I think that this bill I came specifically tonight, or this article, to vote in support of, but after trying to follow my conscience, which is what guides me in every town meeting in the last seven I've attended, I had to get out off of my uncomfortable shoes and sit down and back up, because this new amended proposal is much more fitting and much more beneficial to everyone. We are in town as citizens, and we are fellow citizens, whether we're 65 or just turned 40. I see myself here for a long time coming, working on various town boards, whether it's helping out after school or on garden clubs with my fellow citizens, whether they're senior or otherwise. I see it as an investment in this town, and I hope to take benefits for tax relief, and I hope to be able to be here in the next 15, 20 years. Thank you.
And just before we go on, Gina, how many people are out of the other room? I mean, a number up there. Okay, as we're going to be taking our vote first. Mr. Cole, would you mind coming up here a minute, please?
Yes.
Just so you know what's going on here, I don't want to have secrets. Mr. Coe, as I referred to him before, is a fellow moderator. He's the moderator of the Water District. And I've just appointed him the assistant moderator of the town of Sudbury. And the reason for doing so is we have a group of people, of 30 people out there, who are going to be voting shortly because we have an amendment up to vote on. And he's going to take care of seeing to it that the vote is properly counted out there. While I'm at it, because I'm convinced where we're going to have to go with this thing, could I have six volunteers to be tellers in here, please, up here now?
Now I am. So, do you lose? I know, but do you lose your place on the line? They say everybody sit down because they're going to vote on this motion.
I think you can probably stay here. Oh, you don't have to worry about it.
I know.
There's no vote to be counted yet. I wanted to get the appointee of tellers out of the way. Now, those of you who are standing, I would really appreciate it if you would get into a seat to the extent you can, because you're going to be easier to count that way. If you feel you don't have a seat, I would suggest, unless you're sure you want to speak, that you go out to the other room. Your vote will be counted that way. But this is all your own right. If you choose to stand, fine. I want you to know what I'm going to do. If I have to count a vote, I'm going to put the tellers on the people who are seeing, and I'm going to ask everyone who's standing to come up and stand in front of me, and I will count those people. So that's the way we're going to try to handle this if we have to count a vote. All right. You're recognized, Ms. Deutsch.
Judy Deutsch.
Now, you're on the motion to amend, correct?
On the motion to amend. Judy Deutsch, 41 Concord Road. And I had just asked Mr. Lubisch if he would separate the two parts of his amendment, because I think they are very different. and he will not. And I do want to speak to the second part, which seems to me to speak to the community that Sudbury is, and speaks also to fairness. And so I do think it's very important that if we pass the larger measure tonight, that we do have a means test in there other than the worth of the house, because the two things are very separate. You can have a low-cost house and a very high income. And it is not fair to the younger people in this town for people of senior age with high incomes to have half their taxes exempt.
Ladies and gentlemen, what we have is a mechanical problem. Usually when we set two rooms up, we have total communication between the rooms. Unfortunately, we don't tonight because for reasons I don't fully understand, but they're good. I know that. All right. Now, we're on the motion to amend, and that's what we're on. Yes, ma'am. You want to be heard on the motion to amend?
Yes, I do. I think what we're hearing tonight is that this is an extremely complex and important issue that we are trying to address in simplistic terms. We're sitting here and we're pulling numbers out, 60, 65, 50%, 25%, this income, that income. And I really don't think that we can make such important decisions as this is, when things are just being pulled out of a hat without careful consideration, without careful study, without review by the Board of Selectmen, without a clear implication as to what the financial change will be for our town and our services. And I don't think we should be voting on a motion or an amendment at this point, but we're just pulling numbers out of a hat. So I would say, let's not amend, let's not change. Let's go back to the drawing board. 40. Thank you.
Who else wishes to be heard on the motion to amend? Okay, Mr. Tyler, this is your second shot at this motion. It'll be your last, as you know, under the rules. Unless everybody else
is. Is something wrong with this microphone, Mr. Tyler?
Pardon? Is something wrong with this microphone?
Could you pull up the chart that talks about the age and the cost for the age? And I'm trying to find out what number it is here. It's page 23. I'm sorry, I'm going to just try to, I want to quantify this financial impact of this, because I think that is important, and then talk a few more things about the process, how we got here. Now can you flip it up just quick on it? Yeah, there you go. So, if it starts at 65 and above, and if you made an assumption that lots, if not many, I didn't think that was real restrictive type thing, but it certainly was a restriction. But all the houses were those age 65 and above. That's the bulk. I mean, that's the bulk of where the benefits. I mean, the cost is 2.7 of the $4.1 million. And so, yes, you're reducing what appears to be the cost of the program, making it more restrictive that way, but at the cost of probably eliminating those offsetting benefits. So I submit to you that that change is more likely to mean that this will be a net cost to the town without the offsetting benefits, that it probably never will turn into then the win-win that I foresee under the article that's proposed. So that's the reason that I'd ask you to defeat it. I think that these amendments, and I think this is fair to talk about this within discussing the amendment, there was many questions raised about the procedures about how we got here. I was told about some meetings I was invited to tonight for the first time, and possibly I was, but I was never invited to meetings. Last year I did hear the commitment that for the upcoming year that it was high on their priorities, and I can recall talking with selectmen individually about when were we going to get this going, when we were going to talk about it, and I saw nothing happening, nothing at all. In fact, the first thing that happened last year, after they talked about the plight of the seniors and in the tax deferral, the first thing I read in the newspaper, and I think one of the first items on their agenda, was is that they raised the cost of getting a death certificate, of getting some other things like that, that would only apply to the elderly. But that's just an aside. There was discussion here about why don't we
Mr. Tyler, we're right up against the edge of the amendment at this time, so let's keep it to the amendment, and that other stuff goes to the general motion. Now, come on.
Okay, but the amendment is trying to do what people are saying, that there's some sort of process that we missed in going forward here. And I submit to you that after we submitted the article, we submitted information to these town boards, not one board.
Mr. Tyler, invited. You are not, Mr. Tyler, you are off the amendment. The amendment is very simple. Mr. Lubash has put an amendment in here that says up to 65, and he puts a income thing on it. That's what this amendment's about. It's not about process or anything else.
Okay.
Now, you stay with the amendment, Mr. Tyler, or I'm going to ask you to take your seat.
Okay. Well, stay with the amendment. I thought I was, because that someone asked me in the audience if I might clarify some of those process questions, and I thought it was fair, and I'll go back to discussing the, again, we're trying to create a broad impact. Everybody came here tonight knowing about the proposal, broad tax relief to all seniors. I've put together the financial rationale for why this makes good sense as a win-win for Sudbury. I strongly believe in that. I can't support the other for a business case. I can support it for a charity case, in the sense that, yes, if the town wants to incur $2.7 million to give tax, or around that number, tax relief to people with no offsetting benefits, or little possibility of offsetting benefits, and if that's what the hall decides to do, I think that will be a wonderful act of charity. I was trying to say, let's create a win-win environment, and that's why I think that it is sounds good, but in fact will not be good for the citizens of Sudbury to pass that amendment.
All right. Anyone else want to be heard on the motion to amend? That's what we've got before us. Yes, sir.
Chris Morling, 321 Old Lancaster Road. I applaud Mr. Lubash's attempt to come arrive at an age that we can all agree on, and arrive at a means test that we can all agree on. I believe that even good and bad proposals all need to be fully vetted, and this one has not been fully vetted. The process was flawed, and a big part of the flawed process is that the town needs to vote at the ballot on this as well. Thank you.
Missouri.
Mary Jane Hillary, Willow Road. I'm talking to the income or means testing part of the amendment, and I'm talking as the veterans agent for the town of Sudbury. Move that veterans, their spouses, widows, widowers, and Gold Star parents be exempt from any means test under Article 54. These are people who paid...
No, wait a minute.
Oh, excuse me.
So you're moving to amend the motion to amend?
That's correct.
All right.
Income or
that's called a...
Part.
That's called an amendment to the second degree. In 19 years, I've only had two of them. Now, here we go. Okay. Now, does that receive a second? Do I see a second? Somebody raised their hand. All right. That receives a second. So that's what's on the floor now is the amendment to the second degree. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. This particular group that I have outlined have more than paid their dues.
Please stay in order. Please stay in order. Go ahead.
This group that I've mentioned have more than paid their dues many times over. And there's no better time than now to honor our veterans, since we have our men and women deployed in the military all over the world. So we owe them that privilege, I think, of not having to pass a means test, because they're the very ones who give us the privilege of being here at town meeting tonight and being able to give our opinions and the way we feel about things. So what better way to support our troops in a practical way than to support this amendment so that they do not have to pass a means test. Thank you.
Does anyone else wish to be heard on the second degree amendment? Yes, sir.
Chad Hoffman, 21 Hawes Road. We are getting to the point here where we are dissecting things and taking them apart, and next it will be this person deserves it because they did that. That is not what this should be about. We should not be taking the time now to arbitrarily say these people deserve this and those people deserve that. We should be going back to dealing with the main issue at hand in a responsible way, not in a reactionary way. And so I highly recommend rejection of the Second Amendment, or whatever it is, and let's get back to dealing with the article at hand. Thank you.
Anyone? Does anyone else wish to be heard on this amendment to the second degree? Yes, sir.
Ron Stucks, 175 Knobscot Road. I'd like to agree with the last speaker that we have just heard numbers that have been pulled out of a hat. We've been asked to agree to something or vote on something that has huge financial impact with minutes of consideration. I urge that the second motion be defeated, the other motion be defeated, and that the original motion be voted up or down on its merits.
Anyone else want to be heard in the second degree amendment? I see no one. All those in favor of Mary Jane Hillary's motion, I'm sorry to use names, but I want to clear whose motion is up now, which is that amendment which would exempt widows, widowers, and Gold Star parents from any means test under Article 44. All those in favor of that, please raise your cards. All those opposed? All right. I'm going to call it defeated, and I should explain something to you. I've asked for a count of who's in the other room, and I'm told there's 40 people there, so I don't believe even if they all voted the other way, it would change the result of my call, which is that the second degree amendment is defeated. This brings us back to Mr. Lubash's amendment. Again, I apologize for the use of a proper name, but I think it'll make it clear if you don't mind, Mr. Lubash. And does anyone wish to be heard on that motion now? I see no one. All right. All those in favor of the motion which would change the qualifications from 60 to 65 and also put a means test of $70,000, all in favor of that, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed? All right, again, I'm going to call it defeated because, in my opinion, even if all the 40 votes in the other room went the other way, it would still be defeated. That brings us back to the main motion. And, excuse me. No, the moderator has the right to decide when to take a motion to call for questions under our rules. This is a matter that's of great interest to a lot of people, and it's not in order to make a motion for the question at this time. Later on, maybe, but not yet. Yes, sir.
Andy Schwartz, 12 Metacomet Way. I want to speak in opposition to the article. As an initial matter, I just want to reiterate what's been told about the process of bringing an issue of this importance to the floor of town meeting. No prior opportunity for public meeting, public input, or discussions with town boards. In fact, the article contains a provision that in order to amend it, there has to be an open meeting of the Board of Selectmen in the Finance Committee and a report from those committees to town meeting in order to amend it. But yet, we don't need that type of input in order to implement this in the first place. Sounds pretty ridiculous to me. I think there's a clear need to address the concerns not only of seniors, but all citizens in town about the rising debt burden. There are several possible alternatives that should be explored in addition to the notion of a senior class exemption. I think we should look seriously, as Wayland is doing, at expanding the circuit breaker legislation, and also expanding what Mr. Brunson mentioned earlier, is the existing tax deferral program, and particularly reducing the high interest rate associated with that deferral, which may be impending, preventing some people from taking advantage of it. Right now, people can, by meeting a means test and 65 years of age, defer all their property tax. That's an incentive to stay in town. If citizens choose not to...
Come on, now, let's settle down. I mean, come on.
People choose not to take advantage of that. That's obviously their prerogative. But the fact is that they can defer all their property tax if they meet a means test. Oh, 50%. Okay, pardon me, up to 50%. Okay, I apologize, up to 50% of the worth of the house. Last night, some of the same people who are proponents of this article complained that the signage article hadn't been adequately vetted, even though there had been scores of public meetings about that, and they complained that there were possibility of loopholes that could be addressed. Well, this proposal has had no public meetings. We're now having the possibility of saying people coming and saying, no, it shouldn't be 50%, it should be 25%, and whatever. And I think what it really calls for is the need to defeat this motion and go back to a full and thorough review and input. I do believe there's a need for means testing or whatever goes on. I have trouble believing that it's there for a 60-year-old executive with a six-digit salary, no kids to support, he's lived in town for a long time, has no mortgage, gets a tax exemption where someone who's perhaps making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, has a mortgage, a couple of kids in college, bears a 13% increase on his property tax to provide that advantage to the other person. I believe this is a serious issue that requires deliberate conversation and analysis, none of which has taken place thus far. In 1969, one of my neighbors, who was an original owner of his house, had an assessed value of his home of $13,250. And Mr. Tyler has talked about a full discussion of the benefits. In 1969, that house was assessed at $13,000. Today, it's assessed at $480,000. That's a real benefit that people have accrued. And also, my last point, I'd just like to note that Mr. Tyler's discussion of the win-win confuses an economic analysis. The loss of income from the tax exemption is immediate. The $9,000 that Mr. Tyler talks about per student is the marginal cost associated with educating a student in public schools. Sudbury does not get $9,000 back if a student doesn't go to the Sudbury schools. It's a false analysis. It's a false economy. This win-win isn't a win-win. It's a transfer of obligations from one part of society to another part. It's inequitable, it's divisive, and I hope it's defeated.
Recognize Ms. Hafner.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. I'm Maureen Hafner, and I'm the Director of Assessing. I have a PowerPoint presentation for tonight, but I've been listening to a lot of the people here, and they have been bringing up many of the points that I was going to make up with the presentation. I'm also here on behalf of the Board of Assessors, and I want to tell you what they think about it, because we deal with tax rates and tax levies and valuation so that we don't deal with
who lives in a house, what their age is, so we have no way of doing it, and calculations that we make can't include a specific age because we can't consider that by law when we are valuing properties. But I would like to tell you what the Board of Assessors' vote is. Next slide, please. The Board of Assessors declined to endorse this article in its current format. And one of the main reasons is it doesn't pass a means test. There aren't any income or asset parameters. And it places an undue burden on the assessor's office staff. The board expresses substantial support for the concept of a need-based senior tax relief. The board enthusiastically supports existing exemption and deferral programs. The reason that they're talking about needs-based is because the assessors deal with seniors that do have problems with their taxes. And what I wanted to show you also, next slide please, is the fact that there are some safeguards, and one of them is the senior tax exemptions that are available. The town of Sudbury has given the maximum benefit of every exemption that's available to its citizens. And there's another exemption that's available called the Clause 18. And it's for those citizens that are seniors that have such a difficult time that they need something to get them over the hump, and the assessors can vote an exemption of all of their taxes, not just a percentage of them. And the next one is this terrific deferral program where seniors can actually defer 100% of their taxes, and it's probably one of the best loan deals in town right now, because last year the town voted to reduce the amount of payback to a 4% interest rate per annum. That's better than anything you're going to get at the bank, even if you didn't need the money. However, there is an income requirement with that too, and that income requirement is that the maximum amount of income is $60,000, and the age has been reduced to age 60. The Mass General laws have been amended to allow the town of Sudbury to include those different limitations. Next. The other thing is that everybody's talking about whether this meets the constitutional muster, and I have up here a portion of a letter that was sent to us from the Department of Revenue. I did take time to ask what would happen if we brought some legislation like this to for our home rule petition. And I'll just let you read it. It basically says what everybody else has been saying, that that the legislator reserves the power to tax. Next slide, please. And it says that assessors have to value property based on their use, not ownership, and that there are four classes of property. And they had told me that this would create a fifth class and that it would not meet constitutional muster. They also said to the extent that a freeze for selected taxpayers could meet muster for a home rule petition, it would have to meet a reasonableness standard. And the legislature has expanded the property tax assistance available to seniors, but for equitable reasons has not chosen to provide blanket assistance to those over a certain age, as does the town's proposal. The next thing is that, and I have got some last minute things from Ralph here and there, and I'm using his figure. How does this exemption work? And I'm just not sure, truly, with all of the way that it's written, and I guess we'd have to see what would happen in the end. But I can tell you this, that the town has X amount of tax dollars that they're going to raise this year for the town of Sudbury, and it's going to come through real estate taxes. So it's either going to shift away from people that are 60 years old and go
go to another group of people, and those people are going to pay someone else's tax burden. Or the town is going to be asking for an override so that they can pay for this exemption in some other way. The original article that I had seen would have required for the town to either reduce the budget by $4.2 million, according to Ralph's analysis, or it would require that we go out for an override for that amount of taxes that would be coming off of everybody's property that's over the age of 60. That, of course, would then result in a higher tax rate. So even those of you who are getting 50% off, your tax rate's going up, and your taxes are going up, too, to some extent. The amended article is, Ralph then said, I believe he talked to one of our finance people and said, well, gee, if it's going to raise the taxes or reduce the budget, even I'm not for it. And
Ms. Hathaway, you're well over your 5 minutes. How much more time do you need?
I am just 2 more sheets.
Three more sheets doesn't tell me how much time.
5 minutes. 5 minutes.
You want another 5 minutes? Any objection?
No.
I had a feeling that was coming. Why don't we see if we can wrap it up in about another minute, Ms. Hathaway?
Okay. I'm going to go beyond all of the rest of the presentation, but I do want to tell you that there is going to be a cost for this. It's going to cost everybody here, even everyone that thinks they're going to benefit from it. You need to know that, because there are that amount of taxes, whether it's $4.2 or $6 million, that needs to be collected, and it's going to be taken care of one way or the other. Either the budget reduces or the taxes increase for everybody. And one last thing that I would like to say is that as the years go by, there are going to be more and more seniors coming in here, and there'll be a greater reduction in the taxes for all of them, and somebody's going to have to pay it, so it's just going to be shifting around and going back where it started. At the end of the day, the decision is yours. I just wanted to give you information, and I hope that you will be careful in what you vote for this evening. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Beth Carroll, 67 Rambling Road. I do oppose the motion this evening, and for three basic reasons. First of all, I think that with all the numbers that have been thrown around, we truly do not know the impact that all this is going to have on real estate values. And whether you're 35, 65, or 85, if you're a property owner, it is going to be impacted in some way. I also don't think we understand the implications yet of the town budget, and there's no way of knowing that when we don't even know what the town budget's going to be, and we won't know that possibly until May. And most importantly, I just don't think it's right to exempt a segment of the population from paying property taxes, not based on their ability of whether or not they can pay, but only because they just happen to get lucky with their birthdays. I'm sorry. I do think...
Now look, kissing is out.
I do think...
And I mean that.
Listening to Mr. Tyler, reading his petition and the warrant, I do take offense and wonder if it's truly a win-win situation. We are all burdened with the override. I have two young children, and I look at them, and I wonder what's going to happen for them in the school systems. We've all put our kids through the school systems. But when I look at this and I look at the wording, I take offense, because to me, I'm not sure that the motives really are in the best interest of the senior citizens, but rather in just keeping families of small children out of town.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Owen Hoffman, 21 Hawes Road. I'm very much against this article. My mother has taught me that stereotypes are a very dangerous and evil thing, especially if they involve grouping people by race, religion, sexual orientation, or age. If I were to get up here and say that all senior citizens are lousy drivers and they should get off the road, you would hiss me. If I were to get up here and say all black people have ribbon, you'd think I was really stupid. Yet we're getting up here and saying that all people over 60 need tax relief. And it's not true. We've already talked about that. There should be more of a need basis to this. If Warren Buffett lived in Sudbury, he wouldn't need tax relief. So we're doing a lot of stereotyping in this article. And what I am particularly upset about is that the language. It talked about, I want to read the exact words here. Okay. Whether intended or not, Article 54 suggests a not-so-subtle attitude of blame, particularly when it says it's designed to slow the dramatic increases in the children moving to town. Are we to believe that all this is the children's fault? Is it the parents' fault? Is it anybody's fault? We're just pointing fingers here. It sounds, as the other woman said, that the intent of this article is not so much to offer relief to seniors, but to keep people with children out of this town. It ain't going to happen, folks. We're here, and we're coming. And we're coming because Sudbury has built a fabulous school system. It has a safe community. It has roads that are cleared. It has a good fire and police department. And because it has diversity of people. And what's happening tonight is a lot of finger-pointing and blame that is divisive to this community and is totally unnecessary. This is a very important issue. I think Mr. Tyler is to be commended for bringing it forward. It's now put in the spotlight. It's not going to go away, and it shouldn't go away. But it should be studied. It should be explored. It should make sense financially for every segment of the population. It's not an issue where you should vote your pocketbook. It's not an issue where you should vote emotion. It is an issue that should be voted after thoughtful, considered information, which we do not have at this time. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Now, I'm Virginia Bell, and I live at 24 Austin Road. We have lived in Sudbury for 40 years, and we're 70, or nearly 70. I'm a little younger than my husband. My husband and I are notoriously frugal, and we're taking a lot of advantage of senior discounts, such as the over 70 ski tickets. But when we ski for 2 hours on a Wednesday, and then we're done. So, you know, that seems fair. We also have the legacy membership of the Sudbury Swim and Tennis. But there again, we just go and sit and read a magazine. We don't cause any trouble, so... That seems fair. We moved to Sudbury for the schools, and all four of our children went to school here, K through 12. They are very successful. They all have advanced degrees in sciences. I was a school teacher myself here in town for 22 years, and I have volunteered at the schools both before and after I was a teacher. We are now involved in Bridges, a program which brings fourth graders together with seniors in the community. Did I forget to say that we are opposed to this article? Yes, because we came here for the schools, and I still want to support the schools and everything else in town. I got a flyer explaining that the expenses of running the town would be passed on to younger taxpayers. I'm not happy with this suggestion. When we were young and living here in town, we had a four-year mortgage, no furniture, lots of kids, a Volkswagen Bug, and my husband decided that he really needed to go back to school full time. Well, we pulled it off and we kept our house. But I'm sure that young people now have lots of expenses and probably less security than most of us senior citizens. As for starting this program at 60, most folks in town at 60 are pretty well fixed. There are some provisions locally for low-income seniors. Maybe they could be publicized or extended. We still get many benefits from living here in town. We go to the library almost every day. We don't worry about crime, parking. The roads are cleared. We enjoy the open spaces. We learned to scuba at Atkinson Pool. We still want to support our town. We're not going to move out because of our taxes. I'm sure we'll get more use out of the senior center when we slow down a little. As for the suggestion that seniors could pay their taxes voluntarily, give me a break. Now, we urge you to vote against this article as it now stands.
Mrs. Bell, I'm just curious, if you're younger than he is, how did you sneak in on that 70-year-old ski trip?
Well, that's for next fall. I'll be 70 then.
Yes, over here.
Chad Hoffman, 21 Hawes Road. My wife specifically asked me not to get up here tonight because of some health conditions, but I find myself drawn to do this. I will try to stay calm. There are a few things that were said tonight that were in the warrant that really bother me. Empty nesters replaced by people with children. And then one of the many anonymous quotes, babes in arms with their wealthy 30 to 40-ish parents. Now, if my late mother was alive and she heard me talk about people that way, she would wash my mouth out with soap. I would also remind those who were anonymous and chose not to stand up for that some of those babes in arms graduated from these schools and are dying and fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan right now. We have lived through ages of Reaganomics. Remember trickle-down? Everything will be fine. And hundreds of billions of dollars later, the country was bankrupt. We have just lived through a several trillion-dollar surplus. It's gone. The country is on the verge of bankruptcy again for many, many years. We have lived through false assumptions, maybe well-intended, but they wind up in the long run hurting everyone. Now, my kids volunteer at the senior centers in town. My wife and I drive with Fish and have become friends with many of the seniors in town. At the same time, I must say, and I've heard Mr. Tyler say this, and I've heard other politicians say it, government is not business. You cannot necessarily apply the hard and cold aspects of how to run a business to government. Government deals with people. This is social economic engineering at its worst. And while I agree that the principle that we must have a process to find a way to help seniors, this is not the answer. This is destructive to the community at large. It lacks any link to the spirit of the Constitution, which I would advise some people to take out and read once in a while. And if it passes, it will bring a sense of shame to this community. And I applaud the Selectman Rupinian for saying that. It is shameful that we're allowing a divisive debate at a time when the country is at war.
Yes, sir.
Jeff Klopp, 15 Iron Works Road. I did tonight and would gladly do so in the future support tax relief for seniors because I truly believe that no senior should be forced out of their home strictly because of their inability to pay their real estate taxes, because through no fault of their own, their home value increased so dramatically that it became a burden. But having said that, I don't believe this is the correct proposal to achieve that. As I said before, I voted for the amendment because I believed it was closer to what is truly intended and what should truly be done. Now, having said that, I urge that people reject this article and this motion that's before the floor, because while Mr. Tyler's argument was very well constructed, many of the assumptions it's based upon are completely flawed. The first assumption that Mr. Tyler made was that people, older people, were leaving town because the taxes are there. Well, I'm not going to dispute that that's certainly an issue for some people. I think if you really look at what happens, empty nesters are also called snowbirds, principally because they want to leave the atrocious weather that we have here in the wintertime, especially after a year like this one. Secondly, the assumption that Mr. Tyler makes is that the cost per student can be calculated and run that way. I think any of us who've ever run serious budgets before understand that there are many fixed costs. There's going to be a cost to heat a school building, whether there's one child in it or 300 children in it. And those fixed costs are not easily divisible by the number of students that exist there. So by simply saying there are fewer students there does not necessarily lower the costs in the way that Mr. Tyler says. So I challenge whether or not his win-win even calculates. Finally, I return to the point that I started with. I think the assumption that Mr. Tyler makes is flawed, that certain seniors only need this amount of real estate tax abatement. If they are truly means-tested and their needs are such, perhaps they should have all of their real estate tax abated so that they don't have this problem at all. So based on the fact that the fundamental structure of this proposal has neither been well vetted and is based upon a series of very false assumptions, I urge that it be defeated. Thank you.
Mr. Meitzel.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'm Mike Meitzel, 34 Barton Drive. As town council has indicated, the subject of tax relief for seniors has been discussed for many years, including a town meeting. So it's somewhat curious as to why it was necessary for a citizen to do all of this work and to bring this article before town meeting. The town boards had plenty of time to do it, and it should have been done by the town boards. I believe that's the first time that anyone has clapped for me when I've spoken. Before Sudbury, before we came to Sudbury, we lived in a locality where the local income tax supported the school system. It wasn't a real estate tax. My wife grew up in a town which exempted all real estate taxes on senior households. So it's nothing unusual. Many of our friends and neighbors have left Sudbury, and they went to places like Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and even only a few towns to the west of Sudbury here in Massachusetts. On the economy and the difficult times we have, the economic downturn has not only impacted town finances, it has also impacted the pensions of many of us who are retired. If it hasn't impacted your pensions, very good, but it certainly has impacted ours. What we experience is one override proposal and approval after another, year after year, and it looks very much like we might have another override coming up this year. Earlier this year, in regard to what the town has done in the past in regard to relief for senior citizens, earlier this year I picked up applications for tax exemption from the assessor's office. They do contain a means test. That means a capability to pay test. But these tests look rather unfair. Eligibility under these tests seems to depend upon what one has done with his or her pension. If one places one's funds into an annuity and lives off the return from the annuity, one could be eligible for an exemption. However, if one were to place the same amount of retirement funds into real estate and lives on rental income, one might not qualify. In other words, the form of one's net worth apparently determines eligibility. And Boy, if you have any assets, you won't be eligible for any relief. Finally, in regard to legality, as some other speaker had mentioned earlier, if it's not legal, the Attorney General, Department of Revenue, and other departments can decide that. And they can tell us what we have to do in order to make it legal. In other words, I'm very disappointed that the Eton has not taken any action up to this time. And really, I fear that if this hadn't come up, all we'd have are these small, what are they called? These small tests of limited means and small types of relief that really, they're sort of demeaning and insulting if one tries to go to the Board of Assessors and use the word beg for them. Nothing against the assessors. They're doing a fine job. It's just what you have to go through to try to get tax relief.
Gentlemen down here. Wait a minute. Let me ask a question. How many people have not made up their minds on this one? I don't see anybody who has made up their mind. So I think I will take the motion for the question. All those in favor proceeding to vote and terminating debate indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed? All right, it's clear that carries because in the other hall, there's only some 50 people, and that wouldn't change the result. All right, I'm going to count this vote right from the get-go because I've been up here long enough to know when something's close, and we've got to count the other people too. So, all of you, I would like everyone who's standing in the side to try to find a seat. If you can't find a seat and you want to vote, come down here in front of the stage and stand, and I will count your vote, and I hope I won't make you stand too long. The tellers, where are my six tellers? One, two, where are my tellers? Any of them left on me? There's two, four. Where are my other two tellers? One. Oh, they're in back already. Could the tellers please get in position at the back of the hall? Now, anyone who wants to be counted who can't find a seat, just please come up here in front of me, please. Yeah, right along here. And I'm going to ask the officers out there, I'd like the doors closed once I get started here. Mr. Coe, I know you can hear me, and if you would start the process in there, and I will take from you just a total affirmative and total negative from the other room. Yeah, do find a seat if you can, because it makes life easier on you and on everybody. All right. Are the tellers ready? All right. Now, all those who are in favor of the motion under Article 54, please stand and raise your card. The tellers will only count cards. And please remain standing until such time as I ask you to sit down. the right-hand side. Yeah. 100. Oh, yeah, have them all sit down now. Oh, you mean as you're going by them? Yeah, if you're going by them. Thank you so much. So you can put the affirmative in there. Thank you, sir. Article's being passed over, but it's going to be passed over on the 21st. It's passed over. This opinion of counsel, it's illegal. Passed over. Well, if this depends, tell us what you... If you want to amend it, give Mr. Kenny an amendment and tell him to tell me it's illegal, I'll let it go. But other than that, no. Thank you. to pass the time a little bit, somebody has suggested to me tonight kind of an amusing thought, and that is, if the Iraqis could really watch this process work tonight, would they really want a democracy? What do you got? 178. All right, would the tellers please get in place again, and we'll count the negatives. Are the tellers ready? Hands are up there, hands are up there. One more over here. All right. By the way, I'm sorry. I said the wrong thing. I said, please remain standing till I sit down. Please remain standing till the tellers tell you to sit down. I apologize if anybody stood for a long time for no good reason. All right. All those opposed to the motion under Article 54, please stand and raise your cards. 56. Thank you. Thank you all so much. Appreciate it. Stay put. Don't run away from me yet. What was that? Of 775 voters voted, which means that it required 388 votes to pass the motion. The total in the affirmative was 430. The total in the negative, 345. I declare the motion passed.
Point of order.
Yes.
Mr. Moderator, could you clarify the procedures for reconsideration? I think that's
yes.
A fair question.
Yes, I will. One can move for reconsideration right now, and if one does so, it would require a two-thirds vote of the hall to pass. The other alternative is that by noon tomorrow, you must file with the clerk a petition signed by 15 registered voters of the town who were in attendance tonight seeking reconsideration. If that is so, then on May 21st, I will announce that I have received that, and it will be the first order of business the second night. But since we'll probably finish on the 21st, I think, it will probably be the last order of business that night, if such a petition is filed. So if anyone wishes to move for reconsideration now, I don't think so, because you're going to lose it, but you can petition. Let me tell you where we're going to go now. We have three articles left in the warrant, and instead of dealing with them, because one is, well, I'll do it. I'm passing over. No, I won't do it. Article 55 may be passed over. It depends upon some legalities. And Articles 56 and 57, I've already been advised, they're going to be indefinitely postponed. So what I'm going to do as a technical matter is put the meeting in recess until May 21st at 7:30, and we'll then take up the articles we put over plus those three articles. Thank you. Okay.
I'm going to make you make that decision.